Good evening, everyone, and welcome to OTN's preview show for the Summer Games Fest and Xbox Showcase and 18 bajillion other amazing gaming showcases happening throughout the week and next week and the upcoming weekend and the week after. My name is John. I am joined, as always, by the King of the Courtside, if you're here on OTN Media all the time. Joey, what's up, buddy?
Doing well, John. Doing well. A little earlier than we usually do the show in the week, going on a Tuesday instead of a Thursday, due to some busy schedules in our future, especially yours with WizDG casting later this week. But all the same, it is a busy week of gaming news, and there's a lot to touch on. But John, we're also joined by someone else. Give us that intro.
Awkward transition. We are now joined by Eric as well from Starlight Beacon's Transmission, a.k.a. the living holocron of Star Wars knowledge. Eric, what's up, buddy? Welcome to our preview show. Glad to have you.
Well, thank you once again for having me. I wouldn't call myself a holocron after we had a little bit of that knowledge test last night at like 11 o'clock at night. That just was not entertaining.
You were tired, though. Yeah, you can blame it on sleep. You were sleep deprived.
Yeah, I was sleep deprived. I had an early day that day. Anyway, yeah, great to be here, ready to talk some video games.
And so, Eric, while you're introing, where can everyone find you on socials as well?
So we did this the last time.
Good luck.
good luck, everybody. You can find me most everywhere at SB Transmissions. That's Instagram, Twitter, or X, or whatever they're calling it nowadays as well. It's also Threads, Blue Sky, and I do have Hive, but I'm barely on there.
Yeah, not quite as much buzz going around Hive nowadays. But no. Yes, very glad to have you guys. Follow Eric. For sure, he does some great content, constantly putting out Star Wars content, and now is a perfect time to follow him, especially with the Acolyte dropping later tonight.
Yeah, thanks for having this on a Tuesday night that a big Star Wars show is premiering. Thank you.
Yeah,
I know, we end just in time. It's perfect time.
It's almost like he knew you and I are big Star Wars fans. Joe was like, you know what? Screw you guys. We're gonna talk video games before we can even get to Star Wars tonight, which is fantastic.
Exactly. Yeah, forget the Star Wars murder mystery. We got to find out what's going on with
a lightsaber that doubles as a lightsaber whip. Hello. But that's fine, Joey. It's fine. Well, we'll just do this here.
Yeah, we know that you don't like fun.
Oh, my gosh.
But
y'all are crazy.
But Joey, but before we start our amazing preview show, the social medias for OTN Media, if you are not following us, it's OTN Media on Facebook. Well, look at that. Welcome back, everyone. Sorry about that. OBS crashed. They decided to... John's broadcast software crash. Yes, my fault. My apologies for the software crashing, everyone. Not OTN. It's John's software crashing. My apologies profusely, my lord. OTN Media is where you can find social media. Links for OTN Media. Good luck finding it. Threads and Instagram put an underscore between OTN and Media. You can find the funness there as well. Joey at Courtside King, myself at Is This Thing John. Sure, let's see how long it goes before OTN crashes again. Joey, we are celebrating the start of Summer Gaming Showcases kicking off this week with Jeff Keighley and the show that will never end, the Summer Game Fest, almost right up there with his Game Awards show. Joey, let's go ahead and kick it off. What are we even looking at here going into the Summer Game Fest?
Yeah, guys, I mean, there is a lot going on. Hopefully we don't run into any more tech issues for OTN, for me, for John, or Eric tonight. But we're going to try to work our way through everything as it comes. With that being said, Jeff is doing Summer Game Fest again. For those who have not maybe followed the gaming scene in recent years, E3 was kind of the big showcase around this week. We ended up in that first to second week of June. You typically see a lot of game publishers come out. There were a lot of interviews from media, from fans. We got a ton of big announcements from new games to new parts of games being extended with DLCs or new content. Now it's kind of come into this new conglomeration where we have Summer Game Fest coming together under Jeff Keighley's umbrella, mainly known for his work with the Game Awards at the end of the year in December. But again, he's jumping into the summer scene, and we've seen it continue to evolve over the years. But like John said, there is still room for improvement, per se, in the area. He has pulled in more developers. Some have left. Unfortunately, no Nintendo this year, at least taking part in the Summer Game Fest portion, but hopefully a Direct later on. With that being said, there are a lot of different people who have bought into the Summer Game Fest this year, so we're going to touch on just some of those showcases upcoming in this next week and a half, and then dive further into the Summer Game Fest opening night, where we're going to see a number of big announcements there as well. So first is Summer Game Fest opening night. That is going to be June 7th, that one at 5 p.m. Eastern time. And we have the Day of the Devs, typically done by Double Fine, and I believe it's IndieBit, if I remember correctly. They come together and do a Day of the Devs indie showcase, which is great. A lot of indie game developers kind of getting their first broadcast to people on that showcase. You see a lot of new games, a lot of new developers, and a lot of new IPs there. Then we have Devolver Digital, who typically goes way off the reins doing their own thing. Usually very odd skits get played out in that showcase, but also some really big games. Cult of the Lamb was in there recently. That was one of the bigger ones. You have some pretty exciting ones in that showcase this year as well. That one is going to take place on June 7th too. So three showcases right there, back to back to back on June 7th. June 8th moves us to the Future of Play Direct. This one, again, a lot of these are going to focus on indie games. It is definitely a big indie game year. You're going to have some first-party games. We had some in the Sony State of Play in May. You're going to have a ton in the Xbox showcase as well. Ubisoft has some good first-party, too, from the AAA perspective. But a lot of these showcases are going to be pretty indie-focused. After the Future of Play Direct, we go into the Wholesome Direct on June 8th, followed by the Latin American Game Showcase on June 8th as well. I don't really know the length of many of these either. They haven't been published. I would assume most are between 30 minutes to an hour. Some of them may run a little bit longer, like today's showcase, the Indie 3 Direct, but we really don't 100% know until we get a little bit closer to. Jeff does have time blocks on his Summer Game Fest calendar, which you can subscribe to, summergamefest.com. I will say those time blocks have not been accurate as of yet, so take it with a grain of salt. They might run longer or shorter than he has them projected for. Typically, I think he has about an hour on those time blocks. After that, we have the Women's Led Summer Game Fest. I don't really know if this is going to be an extension of the main opening night or kind of a redo with a more female perspective, maybe diving into some female developers from those studios. Then June 8th continues with the Future Games Summer Showcase. That one's going to run around 3 p.m. Eastern time, typically runs about an hour for that one as well. June 9th is going to bring you the big Xbox Showcase, followed by the Call of Duty Black Ops 6 Direct. Yes, that is a mouthful. After that will be the PC Gaming Show celebrating its 10th anniversary, and then the Ubisoft Forward Showcase, which I know we are all big excited for in terms of Star Wars Outlaws being a main game at that showcase. So very much looking forward to that one. Now that we've kind of got the homework done, though, we've gone through the full calendar. There is an easy way to subscribe as well. Again, Jeff's page is one way. Our Discord server as well, discord.me/OTN. We went ahead and pre-built all the events out there as well. If you guys want to subscribe for reminders of any of the events that kind of trigger your fancy per se. You don't have to sign up for all of them. Just hit reminders for whichever ones you are interested in. Now, guys, with that being said, we're definitely going to dive into the Xbox Game Showcase later on in today's show. But Eric, we'll go over to you first. Of all these showcases in Summer Game Fest, what are you looking forward to the most, both showcase-wise as well as some games you're hoping to see?
All right, so showcase-wise, definitely looking forward to the Ubisoft Forward, especially for Star Wars Outlaws in August. That's an August 30th release date, so this is going to be one of the last looks that we get at the game before the game officially releases. Looking forward to that. Also looking forward to Assassin's Creed Shadows from Ubisoft as well. I think that that is going to be... I think it's going to be a good title. It's definitely interesting having the two playable characters. And I don't really watch Devolver Direct, but I have heard that they're pretty wild and pretty crazy. And it's them just making fun of themselves, but also making fun of the industry as a whole, but in a lighthearted way. But other than that, looking forward to... Warhammer Space Marine 2, definitely, and then also Dune Awakening I'm actually looking forward to, so we'll see what happens.
Yeah, definitely some good stuff coming. John, I know there's some things you're looking forward to as well, especially when it comes to World of Warcraft on the Blizzard side of things, but outside of the Xbox showcase, are there any of the other that are triggering your attention per se?
I can tell you the one that's not triggering my attention, that's the Call of Duty one.
Yeah.
I care less about Call of Duty. I'm sorry. I feel like a lot of people have just gotten fed up with Call of Duty. Yeah, it's going to sell incredibly well. That's great. Congratulations. Moving on. PC Gaming Showcase is what I'm excited about. Not just because, you know, possible, you know, World of Warcraft stuff there. I mean, we already know what's coming out. The beta starts tomorrow. If you pre-ordered the Epic Edition, which means the game will be coming out, the expansion will be coming out in, you know, towards, you know, fall time, late fall. So, I mean, I'm excited for that. Obviously, the new Assassin's Creed is going to be incredible. Seeing that, I love the name. Shadows is such a great, great name for Assassin's Creed. Obviously, anything Star Wars is always great, even though the style of game for Outlaws, I'm not a huge fan on. I really don't like my Star Wars being tainted by Overwatch. Mm-hmm. I'm not too happy with that, but I'll give it a look-see before the game comes out. But really, it's the PC Gaming Showcase for me is the big one, aside from the overall main showcase also.
Yeah, I'm curious. With it being a 10-year anniversary, do you guys think we'll get something big there, whether it be a game or a feature or a hardware reveal or anything like that?
Half-Life 3, finally.
Ooh, that's a bold claim.
Wrong three. The three is correct, but it's not Half-Life. It's pronounced StarCraft.
Absolutely. StarCraft 3 would be awesome, too.
Give me StarCraft 3, Blizzard, you filthy animals. Give me StarCraft 3.
Well, while we're also there with Blizzard, give me Warcraft 4 also. Give me a brand new Warcraft game.
Wow, okay. We're going hard on the RTS titles tonight, huh?
You know what? Well, while we're there, Heroes of the Storm, bring it back.
Yeah. Oh, my gosh. Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. Bring it back. And give us Heroes of the Dorm again, ESPN.
Honestly, that was an awesome, awesome competition, Heroes of the Dorm. You got to play for your scholarship money. Like, come on now. That's awesome.
Yeah.
That was a big one, too. I feel like that was honestly one of the bigger collegiate scenes out there outside of like League of Legends.
It was. Yeah. It really was. Yeah.
Twas definitely popping. So let's move on to the Summer Game Fest show itself. So obviously Jeff does this big opening show. He's done it for the last 3 or 4 years. It's probably going to run about 2 hours long this year, and he has quite a few titles in there. Now, again, he has put out a warning. He has said, we're not going to have the biggest of titles. We're not going to have the Elden Ring, per se, of a few years ago. We're not going to have Kingdom Hearts 4, which a lot of people are projecting to be in this showcase. But he does say it's a drier time in the gaming industry. There's not as many big AAA games. I think that's a little bit of an excuse, but there is a bit of a gap here for certain publishers. With that being said, he's still got some big stuff in here. So far announced, he's given us about 15 or so titles that have come out on different social media platforms that either announced that they are in the showcase themselves or that Jeff himself has announced. One in particular that has caught quite a few attentions, and I know we're not the biggest horror game fans here, but Blumhouse Games is going to reveal a game, or at least reveal more of what they're working on. Eric, you probably know better than I do. I think that's the studio behind like Paranormal Activity, that Megan movie, different kind of horror movies that have made the name for themselves in recent years, now kind of moving into game development, and I'm kind of curious to see what they put out.
Yeah, they also did the Five Nights at Freddy's movie as well.
Oh, that's them as well. Okay.
They put them out. And I think they did the last two Halloween movies too. I'm not a horror fan, honestly. I'm not a horror fan, but I know like what they've done. So yeah. I believe they produced Five Nights at Freddy's.
Okay.
So they could be giving us another Five Nights at Freddy's game.
Now they could. I don't know if they have, I think it's an original IP. I'm not 100% sure. I know they have a lot of IPs as far as studios they've worked with game-wise converting over to movies and different movie horror films. But as far as the IPs that they own, I don't 100% know. But again, as you mentioned, if they're working with Five Nights at Freddy's, that definitely opens up the door for potential crossover. But I'm hoping they go the original IP route. I'm hoping they give us something absolutely wild. I don't know if we've ever had anything like a, I don't know how to explain this, right? Like Paranormal Activity, there are definitely paranormal games out there, but something that's almost like that film perspective that we have in the movie. I'm curious if they were to kind of take that into a game route, like a surveillance camera-y type of situation. I don't know exactly how it would play out and what the mechanics would look like, but I do think they have some interesting IPs to kind of work with in that sense.
Yeah.
Not that ghosts are really a unique IP. We've seen ghosts for many years in many games, but I am curious to see how they kind of adapt things and move it into a new platform. Dune Awakening is another big one. I know all three of us were big fans of the Dune films. I just recently read the book, which is a little bit different than the film as well. So I'm curious, as you guys eventually read that book as well, to discuss some of those things. But the game itself, this is some beautiful gameplay that we've seen so far. The biggest turnoff for me is that it's an MMO. And the reason is, and John always warns me about this, MMOs are a huge time sink. It is very hard to take on more than one MMO. It's tough enough to take on one in and of itself while playing other games and doing other things in life. So that's my biggest worry with this game. With that being said, the idea of traversing sand, making my own camp, scavenging for water, choosing a faction, riding a sandworm potentially, sounds like a hell of a good time to me. Anyone else excited for Dune Awakening?
Nope.
For real?
I already played too many MMOs. It looks cool. I think Dune's great. I personally don't love Dune more than World of Warcraft or the Warcraft lore. So for me to sit here and be like, oh, I'm going to put more time and effort into another MMO, especially when the, you know, trilogy is coming out to end essentially the current story of World of Warcraft, you're going to be going up against a behemoth that is Blizzard and World of Warcraft. You're going to get some people, but this is going to be like another Guild Wars 2. It's going to pull in people, but it's not going to come anywhere close to touching World of Warcraft. And honestly, I really don't see the longevity in Dune as an MMO either. Maybe I just don't know enough about it. But I have watched the movies. I have started reading the books. I just don't think there's enough there to really have an ongoing MMORPG.
I mean, I think that's a good point. And I think, Eric, you'll probably dive into it more. But when it comes down to the MMOs in general, like, they are all competing. Like you said, World of Warcraft is one. You have Star Wars has a big one as well. It's, what is it, the Old Republic? Is that the Star Wars one?
It's Old Republic.
You have Guild Wars. You have Elder Scrolls. There's just so many out there. And like John said, they compete for attention. Is Dune a big enough IP to hold the attention of gamers for a longevity to even last, really? Like John said, you're going up against WoW just even later this year. Then on top of that, the next storyline of World of Warcraft, the next storyline of Elder Scrolls. And there's just a lot competing for attention there on top of all the other games that come out and the free-to-play games that have battle passes and such. I think that's its biggest competition. But that being said, it does look gorgeous. And as someone who enjoyed Dune, I am tempted to at least download it. But again, knowing I don't have the time to commit to it does make me a little nervous up front. Over to you, Eric.
Sorry if I was interrupting there.
You're fine.
But for me, it's one of those things where this has to be at a good price point for me, because I'd be between content creation and wanting to play other games and also reading a bunch of Star Wars material as well as other material that I'm going to blame Joey for. It's a little tough to get into these MMOs because, you know, I'm also married, so I want to spend time with my wife and everything. So they have to nail the price point for this. And I also don't want to see a subscription based around this at first, but I have a feeling they're probably going to make this like $20 a month, like, you know, to do this. But you're going up against World of Warcraft, and that thing has been a juggernaut for, what, 15 years now? Over 15 years?
Almost 20.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's huge. And then you've got Guild Wars, which has longevity. You have the Old Republic, which has been around for years. You know, you have all of these huge MMOs, like Joey said, Elder Scrolls. So it's really hard to bring out an MMO in an already crowded market. And I also have a feeling they may treat this like a live service game, and that might turn a lot of people off on it too.
Oh, it's 100% going to be live service. I definitely think that'll be an aspect.
But I also think it looks beautiful and it looks like it's going to be fun. But, you know, if you want to give me a free trial, you know, at launch for the game, like, you know, do a free trial, like up to level 20 or something for players just to see if they like it. You know, go for it. But you know, I can't.
I don't think they're going to do a free trial right off the get-go. If numbers aren't what they want it to be within a month, then absolutely you're going to get a free play weekend. Because it took World of Warcraft forever to let you play the base game for free up to level 10 or level 20 now. Yeah. And the free version of the game heavily limits you on what you can and can't do, i.e. communication, auction house, trading, etc. So I really don't see a free version or a trial weekend unless the numbers are terrible within the first month. But no, I mean, you're spot on. Like, I, you know, the subscription price alone turns a lot of people off. $15 is a sweet spot. That's what we've seen from both the Old Republic and we've seen from World of Warcraft. $15 seems to be something where people are happy with a live service game getting constantly updated, getting new, not just expansions, but content updates. And that's where my real question is. You know, yes, Dune is some massive, thick books. But the thing is Dune is done, right? It's there's an end to the narrative of Dune. It's not like, you know, are the creators of Dune behind this game and they're going to write new lore to expand this universe as it continues to grow to try to make it more interesting? Because with MMOs, they're being super grindy. You know, how much are you going to be able to ride a sandworm for the 15 millionth time for 300 meters or more? You know, it's going to get boring. And the same issue that World of Warcraft has is they have to constantly pump out new content, different things to do. You know, some people focus more on farming, you know, minerals or herbs or whatever. And they do like in-game stock market kind of things. Or like, there's so many different ways of playing that game. With Dune Awakening, what are all the different ecosystems that they're going to have? What are the different ways you can play this game? Is it solely going to be, you know, this is the main storyline with, you know, a couple side quests here so Joey doesn't get distracted and will actually come back to the main quest line and possibly finish the main quest line? Starfield, Joey, finish it.
Shots fired, shots fired.
But nonetheless, like, I'm curious, not in actually playing the game, but how the game is built. Because that's a problem that a lot of young MMOs have, is there's literally not enough to do. And you run out of content, and people want more, and the answer is, and the answer of, oh, wait 3 to 4 months is not going to keep people around, especially when you have another World of Warcraft expansion coming out. Anytime Star Wars comes out with any kind of media, whether it's on Disney Plus or a movie, it feels like the Old Republic pops a little bit in population because it gets people excited about it again. You know, so it's not like there's another driving factor. Maybe the next Dune movie, when it comes out in 18 years, you know, that may be a thing that pops the MMO for Dune Awakening. But I just really don't feel like there's enough to drive it outside of the fandom, and that fandom's going to get bored if there's not enough content going forward.
Can I just also just ducktail on this real quick? Because yeah. I think that because you brought up a lot of great points. Another thing about this MMO is this just going to be primarily set on Arrakis, or are we going to go to other worlds in the Dune universe too?
Because I think it's just Arrakis, at least at launch.
Terrible.
Yeah.
Lots of sand, ladies and gentlemen.
I don't like sand.
But for me, it's one of those things where we were introduced to a couple of planets within the first two movies, and of course they're also in the novels too. I want to go to the planet with the black sun and check that place out, and if I can do quests there. But being just mostly on Arrakis, while that's cool, you're going to run out of things to do really quick on Arrakis. That's just my
whole bunch of walking. It's Walking Simulator 2024 is what it is, apparently.
Yeah.
Bring your sunscreen.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. Yeah, I mean, it's going to be a lot of Arrakis. It's going to be a lot of sand. Like John said, there will probably be some sandworm riding, but how much do you want to do that? How many meters do you want to give for that achievement per se? But I think, yeah, that's going to be the biggest issue. But I think that also opens up room for expansion, right? Now, again, I think it's going to have a hard time competing in general, but opening up to other planets, that's an expansion pack right there. Black Sun Planet, expansion number one. DLC number two, over here to this other planet. Because the universe is vast. And I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, Eric, But Frank Herbert's son has gone on to write like 20-something other novels, I think, after the Dune novels we know from Frank Herbert. So they have extended the universe. With that being said, I don't think it's rated very well. A lot of people not a big fan of a lot of those extended novels. So maybe it could go off of those. Maybe it goes off its own path with the family's permission. I don't know 100% what that ends up looking like, but I think at least at launch, they are focusing on the most dangerous planet in the universe, which is Arrakis in that Dune universe. So that's the way it keeps being marketed, at least. So we'll see.
I kind of think Earth is up there in most dangerous planets in the universe.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Definitely some wild things on the planet Earth here. A couple more here in Jeff's show. One other one I want to touch on is The First Descendant. Guys, I have heard amazing things about this game. There was a playtest last week or the week before that some developers have got, or some journalists and media professionals have gone to. Unfortunately, we were not able to attend. But this game looks really cool. It's one that didn't really catch my attention initially when it was shown at the Game Awards, and unfortunately that is the trailer we're playing here. But the gameplay supposedly is extremely polished. The graphics have gone even up a few other levels from what you see here in this trailer. The gameplay is very like Alien meets human, but not in kind of like that, I don't know, stereotypical Alien way. It definitely goes more like the direction of what you see with like a Mass Effect, with a Starfield, if they had alien species, I'd imagine it going that way. But very Mass Effect-y in that sense, where there are these other races you can communicate with, interact with. I love the idea of that. I'm a huge Mass Effect fan. Eric, I know you are as well. And I think the idea of exploring that further, especially given how well some space games have done recently. Now, again, there has been shaky ground for some, like Starfield's launch was a little shaky in some minds. Player count still did quite well, though, overall, as did the excitement levels of Mass Effect and all the trailers that get released. So I think this one has some potential, especially with how well and smooth the gameplay supposedly is playing out early on.
So are we talking about this?
Please dive in. This is supposedly one of the most anticipated games of the upcoming year.
Okay. So I love a great sci-fi story. I'm a huge fan of Mass Effect. I love that series so much. I think that this game looks really cool. However, I'm going to say this right now. Please do not make this a Souls-like. Please do not make this a Souls-like.
I don't think it will be. I think it'll be different for you.
Because I really want to see, I want to see what they can do with this. I mean, it looks very intriguing. I love any game where you encounter aliens, really. I mean, that's why I'm a big Star Wars and Mass Effect fan, because of all the alien species and how they also have human elements to them while being very alien. So also giant enemies, bring it on. Like,
oh, yes, you know, please.
Yeah, bring it on. More explosions, the better. That's all I got to say about that. And I'm sorry about my Souls-like comment, but I'm just tired of Souls-likes.
No, I mean, I think it's a fair comment, right? Like, we've seen a rise in Souls-like games ever since really Elden Ring came out. It's kind of jumped on a bunch. We had another Crab's Treasure recently, which is a little bit more of a fun aspect of kind of taking that Souls-like genre into something new with an indie underwater type of game. But it's definitely something we've seen more and more developers start leaning into. They're like, ooh, if Elden Ring can do it so well, if Dark Souls is now selling well, even these older copies, what can we do to jump on Souls-like? And it's just like Battle Royale, right? Once a popular Battle Royale came out in like Fortnite, everyone wanted to put a Battle Royale out. And then you had the same thing with Tarkov, with like the, what is that? The excavation, the,
Escape from Tarkov.
What's that word that I can't think of where you pull them out?
Extraction.
Extraction shooter. There we go. See, Eric, I knew we had you here for another reason.
I was going to say claw game? Like,
I know, like claw.
We are eternally grateful.
Love it. Great Toy Story reference.
Thank you.
Yeah, I mean, it's one of those things, right? Like, I think this game will land well, and I think we'll start moving back away from the Souls-like genre. Yeah. There's definitely still going to be some games in that area, but at least for now, Elden Ring's going to dominate it. They have another DLC this month. It seems like it's got quite a few bosses, biomes, and such in there. So I think that'll continue to kind of dominate the genre and push some people forward in it. But not everyone can survive in that genre. It's a tough genre. Yeah. Genre that even for From Software has not historically sold super well with some of the Dark Souls games. They obviously got a nice boost when Elden Ring did well. But I think some part of that was George R.R. Martin as well, right?
Yeah.
You tie a big name like that to it and more people are willing to check it out than usual. So we'll see how it ends up doing. But yeah, The First Descendant, at least from media perspectives, I've heard some very, very good things about this one.
Also, grappling hook. You can't go wrong with that in a video game. You really can't go wrong with that in a video game.
Absolutely not. I don't know how much more we want to touch on here for the Summer Game Fest show. I don't want to really spoil anything coming. We will get some updates on upcoming games as well. Jeff has mentioned a few that are going to be in there. Pal World is going to be one of those. The Finals. I know John and I dove into the Finals for a little while there. We haven't been in quite a while, but it did grab our attention, at least up front. And there should be some other updates like that coming out for games that are in that live service genre that Eric loves so much.
So real quick, I have a question about Summer Game Fest. What celebrity is going to show up now for a video game?
No more celebrities.
Because Keeley loves his celebrities for these video games, man.
Keeley brings celebrities in because he's trying to legitimize his shows. And I get it, right? He's trying to bring in the non-gamer to watch his little shows. Because, one, the shows are too damn long to begin with. So now he's trying to bring other people in to boost his numbers up. So he brings in a drunk Al Pacino or people who have nothing to do with video games to talk about when they played Atari back in the day. Because Atari is completely the same as, I don't know, Call of Duty 1100 that we're getting this go around. or Star Wars Overwatch Edition. You know, it's honestly annoying, and maybe I'm just an old boomer dying on this hill, but I'm just sick and tired of BS Hollywood, not even A-list celebrities. They're like B-minus, maybe C-less. Like, when's the last time Al Pacino did something? I can't say that. He's incredible. But like
Pacino,
when was the last time Al Pacino was on a video game? I guarantee you he doesn't play video games. Maybe he plays the Wii with Wii Sports, wherever he plays that with his old people friends, but like
him and De Niro.
I'm just saying here, but like, I'm so sick and tired of it. But really, what I really wanted to say, Joey, is how the hell is Pal World still around?
Yes.
How have they not been sued into oblivion by Nintendo?
Yeah. That's a real question, right? Like, their player count jumps up every time they do a big update, but Nintendo is just going after everyone, it feels like, right now. Friggin' going after 20-year-old Nintendo lookalike mods on Gary's mod on Steam. Like, Nintendo is out for a vengeance right now, so it is very surprising that Pikachu with a machine gun is still jumping around in Pal World, at least for now, but we'll see what happens.
Pika wants to know if you want to play, if you want to, hold on a second. Pikachu wants to know if you want to say hello to his little friend.
Oh, hey, there we go.
Is he going to tie it all back together? Snort like a huge mountain of blow like Pacino did?
Yes! He's going to dive into a pile of illegal drugs and get absolutely blitzed out of his mind and just go on a shooting rampage. It's going to be terrible.
Pal World, play it.
Pal World, download for free now!
I think this is the multiplayer update, if I remember correctly. Like arena mode and all that, I think, is coming.
I already had multiplayer.
No, it has co-op. I think this is the multiplayer battles, but don't quote me on that. It's coming at some point. I don't know if this is that update, but there is definitely multiplayer arena battles coming to kind of go into like that. You guys remember like those old Pokemon Stadium games?
Yes.
That's kind of what I'm picturing a little bit of. Curious if they bring the machine guns into those, but at least the Pokemon battle.
I can see Blastoise with two rocket launchers on his bag. He's like, just going after like a flying top Pokemon. Is just shooting it down and whatever. So stupid.
It definitely will be interesting. So again, guys, if you are looking forward to Summer Game Fest, the official kickoff show is on Friday, June 7th with Jeff's show. Runtime for that is going to be somewhere around 2 hours. Followed by Day of the Devs from Double Fine and I Am 8-Bit, as well as some other showcases to follow that night, as well as into the weekend and the week beyond. With that being said, guys, unless you have anything else to touch on that one, I think we should move into kind of our meat and potatoes, which is the Xbox showcase. It's Xbox, but they also have multiple publishers now. So everything Blizzard falls under this one, Activision, Xbox, and Bethesda. So a lot of those big summer showcases from the past are kind of all moved into this one, minus whatever Xbox decides to put somewhere else. So this is kind of going to be the big, big showcase this summer, at least.
Okay. I got nothing except maybe Christopher Judge will talk for 7 more minutes and give out like.
I don't know if Christopher Judge is ever going to be invited back on.
You know what I want from Christopher Judge? I want another slam against Call of Duty in their 33-minute single player campaign.
I can tell you that will not be the case with this next one.
Oh, yeah, sure.
It's going to be 34 minutes this time.
Oh, no, no. They worked overtime. They burned the midnight oil. It's going to be 42 minutes.
Oh, so typical live-action Disney TV show.
Well, what's going to happen is, so really it's the same amount of gameplay, but they extended the credits because it rolls slower. So that's extending it to the 47-minute mark.
And then you get 5 after credit scenes that are setting up another task force.
No. 5 after credit scenes that's going to set up a remake of a remake of the game that came out in 2003.
Okay, cool. Yeah. Sorry, Joey.
Sorry.
Go ahead, Joey. You guys are all good. You guys are great. I love hearing the different theories and such out here, especially the tilted ones. But yes, Call of Duty. Like John said at the beginning, I mean, regardless of the critique we give it, it's going to sell like crazy. It always does. I think it probably sets records once again. Sales records, probably not, because it's now on Game Pass. So I do think we'll see sales drop off, but player count, I think this will probably be one of, if not the highest Call of Duty player count we've ever seen. Probably next year once it does go to Switch as well. But for now, they're going to wait out for that new Switch, I think it sounds like. Let's address the elephant in the room first, though. We've seen this with multiple showcases now for Xbox. The big question is, ever since Hi-Fi Rush and Sea of Thieves and Grounded and all those games got announced that they're coming to other platforms, particularly PlayStation and Nintendo Switch, one of the big thoughts is, okay, every game that is now shown in whatever showcase it may be with Xbox, is it going to PlayStation? Is it going to Nintendo Switch? And in another opinion, does it even matter? Does it matter if it goes to these other platforms? Some Xbox console players says, yes, it absolutely does matter. Others are like, whatever, more people are playing games, that's great, especially for multiplayer games like a Halo, like a Gears, that really rely on players to play in this crowded space where there's so many games competing for players' attention. It's better to give them a chance up front with multiplayer games publishing everywhere. I know there's many, many different opinions out there on the socials. I'm curious to get your guys' thoughts, one, on the opinion overall of them publishing on other platforms, but two, the idea of, is this going to overshadow the showcase regardless of what we see? Because everyone's then going to ask, is this coming to PlayStation? Is this coming to Switch?
I don't think it's going to overshadow it. I think for some people, they'll be hyper fixated on it. I think at the end of the day, Xbox is run by Microsoft, which is a gigantic corporation that's about making money. How do you make money? Some people say, though, the old school thought was by console locking these games, making them console exclusives. And for a while that worked. Now in 2024, I really don't think that's an option. If you're going to offer Game Pass, cool, that's great. I think that alone is probably your biggest selling point for the Xbox console. And if you put your Xbox titles day one on Game Pass at no additional fee, I think that's a massive selling point more than it being a console exclusive. Prime example, MLB The Show is made by Sony Santa Monica. It is a PlayStation, essentially PlayStation backed studio. MLB The Show, made by Sony Santa Monica, is 100% free on Xbox Game Pass. Sony PlayStation users have to pay for the game. Cool. Great. That's how you do it if you're Xbox. If you're in the Xbox ecosystem, you have the Game Pass, cool. You're paying a flat fee, you get access to all the games. You want to play it on a different console? Cool. Great. $70, please. Just let people play it. Let them pay full price. The selling point is Game Pass. You're not reinventing the wheel, but what you're doing is kind of think of it like when Netflix first started. People tend to forget that Redbox was actually Netflix when it first started, where you could rent your DVDs, get them in the mail, and all the other fun stuff. And then it went to online streaming. You pay a flat fee, you get all these titles. You don't have Netflix and you want to watch it? Great. It's available on another streaming platform for extra money that you have to pay for that title only. And it works for them. They keep raising their prices, and it works. They crack down on password sharing, and guess what? Their subscriptions exploded afterwards. Somehow it worked for them. That's what Xbox is doing with Game Pass. It just makes sense. So if people are going to watch this and go, oh, is this going to go to Sony? Is this going to go to Nintendo? It doesn't matter. If it's day one on Xbox Game Pass, that's the selling point. Let them go to every single console out there. It doesn't matter. Let them pay full price. You don't want to pay full price? Joey, I kid you not. How much money have you saved in video games you've played available on Xbox Game Pass, okay? Versus if you were to have another console, pay the same amount that you did for your Xbox, but now you're paying full price for every single one of those video games, you've already paid off the cost of your Xbox.
Yeah, it's wild. I did the math like last year, and I think it was like $3,750 or something is what it would have cost to buy all those games.
There you go.
Now, with that being said, I think there is a disclaimer here. I would not go ahead and spend $3,700 on video games, right? But because they were available on there, I was willing to try some things I probably would not have purchased. So I would not have spent that much money on another platform. But it did allow me to discover new indie developers I've fallen in love with. Since then, I have bought their games. I've tweeted out different things from them, and I've supported them and encouraged others to support those indie developers. So I think, especially from the indie perspective, it definitely helps a lot to have that service available. It's an easier buy into certain games you might not regularly play.
But it's the exact same thing with Netflix. You're going to watch things on there that have piqued your interest, but because you don't have to pay extra for it, you're going to watch it.
Yep.
And if you don't
like it, then you'll tweet about it.
And then you'll tweet about it. You'll be like, holy crap, I came across this amazing show. And then more people are going to hop on and start watching it. That's what you do. It's free marketing. In the age of social media, paying a subscription for a crap ton of titles, whether it's on Netflix, Amazon Prime, Game Pass, whatever it is, whatever you're watching, whatever you're playing, if you enjoy something, you're going to talk about it, whether it's on social media or in the rare occurrence face-to-face with somebody at the water cooler. You're going to talk about it. When you're happy about something, you talk about it. Also, when you're upset about something, you're going to talk about it. But either way, you're talking about it. So, yeah, I mean, that's the thing. You play the games that you are like, you know what? I'm kind of interested in this game, but I am not $70 worth of interest in this game. I don't have that. Like prime example, Thirsty Suitors. I would have never played that game if it wasn't on Game Pass. The idea of the game seemed cool, but it's not a game that I would be like, you know what? Let me drop $60 on it. But it was on Game Pass, and you want to know what? I really enjoyed that game. It was funny, great mechanics, love the in-game skating on it. The story was hysterical. So I enjoyed playing it. You strike gold like that sometimes, and I've talked about Thirsty Suitors ever since because it's a fantastic game. And you want to know what the last thing in the back of my mind was, Joey? Oh, people can't play this on PlayStation. Oh, no. Is it coming to Nintendo? I don't care. I just don't care. It's on Xbox Game Pass. That's the selling point. And that's why I got brought over from PlayStation.
There you have it, guys. Eric, over to you. Do you think this will be a shadow in the showcase?
Oh, no. No. Because Game Pass is selling. Game Pass is one of the best ways to play. And if you look at the way that they're incorporating cloud gaming, boom. Like, all you need is just a mobile device now or a freaking, you know, laptop. And boom, you've got Game Pass and first-party titles from Microsoft. And then going back to what John said, MLB The Show is free on Game Pass. And how many hours have I sunk into MLB The Show right now? Tons, because it's free on Game Pass and I love it. So I'm not worried about it. Like, I'm really not, because I'm not worried about going to PlayStation. I'm also thinking, hey, if they want to bring this over to PlayStation to get more players to experience these titles, awesome. Or if they want to bring it over to Nintendo to get people to experience these titles, that's awesome. And one thing, John, that you forgot to mention, MLB The Show is on Switch too.
Yeah.
Yeah, and you can pick it up and play it on the go on your Switch, and I think that's awesome. So I'm not worried about it. I think that this whole thing about exclusivity, while it's a discussion that is being had, it's really just, it is what it is, man. It is what it is.
And
just play your games.
And last point real quick, we all have played an online multiplayer game where the queue times have been ridiculous.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
if you're gonna show
yeah,
League of Legends, Halo. Overwatch, yeah, you know, me waiting for LFR and World of Warcraft. My thing is, if you're gonna make it cross-platform, if you're gonna have it on other platforms, it needs to be cross-platform. It needs to be able to play with the other systems. It needs to be able to do that. That's really the only win-win. You cut down on the queue times. People are actually having fun with your game, and people may still complain about having to wait 5 minutes to get into a game, but they'll be like, hey, remember back in the day when we had to wait 23 minutes to pop a queue in Overwatch? Yeah, I'm sure as heck we're glad we don't have that in Call of Duty right now, or whatever MMO, or not MMO, but multiplayer mm-hmm. online game you have. So, yeah, make a cross-platform. Do what MLB The Show does. Play against people on the Switch. Play against people on PlayStation. Play against people on Xbox. Simple as that. Just do it. It's not hard to do. And if Sony can figure it out or invent it, then I'm pretty sure all the other companies can do the same.
Well, I also want to say, like, you know, people are worried that the Call of Duty is not going to sell well. Call of Duty is still going to sell well on PlayStation.
Oh, it's going to sell extremely well, for sure. Yeah,
I mean, it's going to keep... Those numbers are still going to be high, even with the Game Pass installation. People are still going to buy that game, so I wouldn't even worry about that, honestly. So, for those that are worried that Game Pass is going to be this killer for, like, Call of Duty and all of these other titles, like, I wouldn't even worry about that, because Call of Duty sells regardless what it is.
Yeah, I think it still sells plenty fine in other places. And on top of that, you have the Game Pass subscription will offset some of that. Do they lose money overall? I think they will on initial sales, right? Like, you're losing potential PC platform players. You're losing a few Xbox console players, sure, because they're going to subscribe to Game Pass. Others are going to say, I only play Call of Duty throughout the year anyway. I'll just purchase it and save money. But I think the key, and this is what got me with MLB The Show as well, when MLB decided to publish that over on Xbox, I was like, oh, this is great. It's free. Then they hit you with the Diamond Dynasty stuff. And I'm like, oh, I haven't spent a single cent on this game. And they gave me 10 free packs. I'll just buy a few more packs. And then I buy a few more packs. And then eventually you spend microtransactions that equal what the game would have cost anyway. Yeah. So I think that's one thing I noticed when MLB first came over a couple of years ago. And I think the same thing could happen with Call of Duty, right? Call of Duty constantly puts out new skins. It would be very easy to tempt people into those microtransactions, which I think is a conversation about being predatory in general to begin with. But as far as raw sales go, I do think they're going to lose money up front. Yes, they'll gain some back with subscription costs. But I really think with the added players, like me, for example, have I purchased a recent Call of Duty? Absolutely not. Would I dive back into Call of Duty because it's free on Game Pass? Yes. If there was a really cool black and gold gun skin that came out, would I purchase it? There is a possibility if I paid zero for that game, I would spend $10 or whatever on a gun skin. And that right there is $10 they would have never had for me. You multiply that by 100 and you're looking at quite a bit of money coming in from those microtransactions. So I think the strategy is definitely there, like you guys have been saying.
And another thing about Call of Duty, like, I want to talk about that just real quick specifically, because we talk about the install sizes of these games and how huge they are. Put it on cloud, because boom, then you can stream it right to your console. Have it available on cloud, and you will up that player base as well.
That one I'm curious about, because technically Ubisoft has the cloud rights.
Yeah.
So I'm curious if Microsoft is going to buy a license for that from Ubisoft. I think, I want to say NVIDIA already has, so it'll be on NVIDIA GeForce at least, and I'm not quite sure who else has purchased yet.
Yeah, but that was just my thing. Like, if you're worried about the install size, hopefully it comes to cloud.
Yeah, the install size, I mean, that's big. Like, what did I say? I think I published... Or no, it was Destiny that I put in chat recently on Discord. The friggin' Destiny one is like 300 gigabytes or something on Steam. Yeah. It's friggin' wild. Like, and Call of Duty is going to be up there as well.
Oh, yeah.
I think Assassin's Creed games are also going to be very big moving forward. And a lot of it is like this like hub approach that they're going with, right? Like Assassin's Creed, I don't remember the name of theirs, but Call of Duty's is Call of Duty HQ. And then from there, it's going to be a launcher into all the other Call of Duty games. I don't think many people install multiple Call of Duty games at once. Maybe I'm just out of the know with Call of Duty nowadays. But if one game is out, I'm going to probably play the recent game. Maybe I dabble a little bit with the last game, but do I need four Call of Duties all downloaded at the same time in headquarters?
Yes.
No, I really don't, Eric. I also don't need them to be remastered over and over. We've had enough of that.
If you're going to play Call of Duty from 5 years ago, who are you going to play against?
Surprisingly, there are still people playing.
I will tell you this right now. There are still people playing Modern Warfare 3 on PlayStation 3.
And it is wild.
There are still people playing that.
And you want to know what? Those people need to go touch grass and realize that there's other consoles and new games out there. Please and thank you.
You're probably not wrong. Probably not wrong. Okay, last thing I want to say on this before we dive really into the games that are going to be shown in the showcase potentially is the idea. So we've talked about it. You guys are not opposed to these games going to PlayStation and Nintendo Switch. You don't think it really devalues the Xbox hardware very much per se. But what if Gears of War and Halo went over to PlayStation and Switch? Would that be something that kind of moves you in the negative needle territory? Say like a old collection of Gears 1 through 3 or Halo Master Chief Collection. If those went over to these other platforms, kind of these legacy IPs of Xbox, do you think that would damage the brand to the point where maybe not a shadow over the full showcase, but something that would constantly come up afterwards from news outlets?
No.
No. I'm going to tell you why. If you're on Sony and you get excited about finally getting to play Halo 2, great. I'm happy for you. Pay $30 and go enjoy it. I will go download it on Xbox Game Pass and play it there for free. If you want to be excited because you can now be player number two after Joey on Halo Infinite, congratulations. Have a great time 1v1ing Joey, because honestly, going to PlayStation and Nintendo is the only way that population is going to grow. Dead game. Anywhoosies, at the end of the day, like, no, because, like, again, they're going to have to pay for them. The thing is, Game Pass is the selling point. I really think Microsoft is doing a pathetic job at explaining that. And they've done a bad job at marketing for the entire livelihood of Xbox, it feels like. Whether it's random names and numbers of consoles, whether it's just, oh, we came up like the whole Xbox Kinect fiasco. No pun intended. That whole thing. And how it's like, the console always has to be connected to the internet. And they're like, that's an invasion of privacy. Joey, is your console currently connected to Wi-Fi?
It is.
Is your computer currently hardwired?
It is. I think my Xbox actually is too, to be honest.
Do you ever unplug the Ethernet cables?
I buy most of my games digitally. Confession, guys.
Oh, okay. So, fun fact. Microsoft PR just did a horrible job at explaining the Kinect and what it actually does, and the whole Xbox One. That's the problem, is they don't know. You would think a company like Microsoft with all that money would be able to put some smart people in the marketing department. They're just not. They're not marketing Game Pass properly. They're really not. Like, they're catering to the people in the Xbox ecosystem. Cool, great. How are you going to get people to join it, though? And it's not available day one on Game Pass. Cool, great. You're going to need to do more than that. You're going to need more than that cool little badge you slap on a picture you put on Twitter. You're going to need to do more than that. And I think that's the real issue, is if Microsoft was to actually put a team behind marketing Game Pass, we wouldn't be having this issue of, oh no, this game is going to go to another platform for $70 where I get to play it for free. Oh, the humanity. I'm paying $10 a month or $15 a month for 2,000 titles, and someone else is going to have to pay $80 for that same title I just deleted for the new Hello Kitty Island Adventure 7. Oh no, what's happening here? I just don't know. Who cares? Who freaking cares? Go pay for the damn game. I don't care. Good luck following that up.
Yeah, I was just about to say that's going to be a little bit tough to follow up there. But John, I mean, you're absolutely right. Like, I can play this on Game Pass. So to me, the only way that I'm looking at it is, if you want to put Gears and Halo on PlayStation and Nintendo Switch, or the Switch, because I have a feeling it's going to be two eyes for the Switch. kind of like what they did with the Wii.
That would be interesting.
Yeah, but
you mean they're not going to go Switch 2? Are they having Microsoft's marketing department? come up with the
I
name
like the
for
Super
it.
Nintendo Switch, personally. I think that would be a great move.
I kind of like the Switch.
The Switch.
The Switch.
Anyway, if they want to put those games on those other platforms, go ahead. Because, in my opinion, the more people playing these games, the better. Does it suck that it's losing kind of an exclusivity because they're older titles? Yeah, but the thing is, you can just market this with Game Pass saying, hey, the newer titles in this franchise is going to be console exclusive to Game Pass for this amount of time until, you know, it like kind of like what PlayStation has done with Final Fantasy with Square Enix, how, like, you know, they have like a year or two console exclusivity and then it's able to go to another platform. Like, if that's the way that they want to do it for this, that's fine. The more people playing Halo, the better, in my opinion, because I want a bunch of people playing Halo. I want a bunch of people playing Gears of War because I think that they're amazing games. If you want to do that with Forza, bring it on. The other thing is, when it comes to Game Pass, you're also forgetting another selling point if you're Microsoft. And if you're Microsoft and you are worried about your players not jumping into next generation hardware, or I should say current generation hardware right now, what you could do is you have Xbox All Access in your hand, which is you can pay monthly to lease that Xbox until that payment is done, and then it's yours. Mm-hmm. And then when next generation hardware comes around, you have the ability to upgrade to the next generation hardware as it's coming out. So you're not waiting in the long lines and you're not debating if you want to upgrade to that hardware. You have the option of doing it right away. If they would market the hell out of Xbox All Access and being like, hey, you can get the Series S for $24 a month and it also gives you Game Pass Ultimate, I'm down for it, because as a consumer, I'm thinking, how am I going to afford to pay for this Xbox for a little bit? Because let's face it, these machines are expensive because they are tiny computers now. They're tiny gaming computers. So if you're looking at the Series S, actually the Series X is a better example because that's like $34 with Xbox All Access and you get Game Pass. So to me, they should be pushing for that, especially if they're worried about people not jumping on their platform and holding on to old gen hardware.
Yeah, no, I think these are great examples. And I think the other one that a lot of people don't really pay attention to is just the finances overall, right? If we're putting games on more platforms, you're pulling in more money. If Gears of War is selling more copies, they're probably going to get more of that Microsoft money put toward that studio. They're going to be able to keep the live service alive longer. Gears of War 5, there are not many people playing that multiplayer right now. Had it launched on PlayStation and Switch and PC and everything all at launch, maybe we do eventually see those populations stick around a little bit longer. Maybe we see more support there. Again, I think Halo is a great example. I think Halo would be a much bigger player count right now if they had PlayStation at launch. And I'm hoping, at least moving forward, and I think this is beyond just Xbox, I think PlayStation, probably not Nintendo, because Nintendo will always do their own thing. But I think multiplayer games in general should be launched everywhere. In today's day and age, we covered it with MMOs. It is hard to compete for a player's attention. On the multiplayer side, you have your Fortnites, you have your Call of Duties. It is tough for a lot of these other games to survive for very long after launch. We've seen huge player drop-offs of stuff that looked really good. Pal World, Helldivers 2 has seen a big drop-off as well recently. Yeah. Now, they had some other issues too, but even since those have been resolved, we've seen a big drop-off. And it's because all these games are vying for a small population's attention. And the gamer industry is growing, but not growing at the rate to support all of these titles. And I think that really comes down to you want to get as big of an audience as you can at launch, and you want to have a content pipeline to keep them around. How do you do that? You launch on as many platforms as possible. Now, I think the real exclusivity argument, and Eric, then I'll go over to you, I think comes with first-player games, right? Those single-player games, where do you put those? Do you put them in an exclusivity window of 6 months? Do you do a year? Do you say, the hell with it, we're going to launch it everywhere at day one launch? I think that's the question everyone is still competing with. I know Sony has had some internal discussions on that point. Xbox has obviously had internal discussions that have been made external through journalists. But overall, these are discussions happening throughout the industry. Square Enix has said they're going to pull from exclusivity deals. They're not doing those with PlayStation anymore. They just haven't seen the returns up front for some of them. And I think Xbox is trying to be proactive in that sense. One, realizing they're just not selling enough consoles to keep everything exclusive. But two, is it even worth keeping it all exclusive? Is there really that much of an advantage per se if they're not selling enough consoles? And someone who is, like PlayStation, and still having issues funding games. I think it was Horizon Zero Dawn or Forbidden West. One of those did not make its budget, even on game sales. And this is a big PlayStation platform with a huge user base, and they're still having funding issues. So now they're looking to advance into PC, and they're looking at mobile. And internally, they're looking at other console publishing as well. So I think that's going to be a big discussion, right? Financially speaking, where do the financials lay, and how do we continue to support these games? And unfortunately, I think the first thing that's going to come is going to be a price increase for these games, jumping from 70 to 80. But outside of that, I think eventually we do see a strategy with more and more publishers and developers publishing everywhere. The key is going to be what that window looks like for exclusivity. Mm-hmm.
I also feel like if I'm Sony right now, and I heard something, I read an article and I heard this in a podcast that what's his name? Herman Hullest, the CEO, Hullest, who led Guerrilla, has said that most of their multiplayer games, they're actually looking at doing multi-platform, whether it be Xbox, Nintendo Switch, and PlayStation. They're considering that, and then they're looking at single player IPs such as like Last of Us, Horizon, all of that, sticking to PlayStation. Now, like, they could, as you said, Joey, lift it after like a 6 to 12 month window, saying, hey, okay, or port them over to PC faster, making them more accessible to people, because we are looking at PlayStation trying to double down more on PC. God of War Ragnarok is actually the perfect example of that, mm-hmm. especially with it coming in September. So we are seeing that, but also if I'm Microsoft, yeah, I'm also looking at how can I sell more games to really cover the cost, like you said, because a lot of these games now are getting Hollywood movie budgets of like mm-hmm. $200 to $300 million. And we as consumers, we're paying $60 to $70 depending on the game and depending on the title and the platform. We're paying $70+, and I'm sorry, $70 is a lot of money. That's like half groceries. You know, that's like half of a grocery haul, if Agreed. You really think about that. So you also have to look at that, whereas is the cost going to be beneficial for you in the long run? Because you've got to market the hell out of these games too, especially to get these people to play these games. And you know, as consumers, we're also looking at AAA experiences. We keep wanting these AAA experiences and everything, but some of these games aren't worth the $70 price tag for the experience that they're trying to give you. And that's all I got to say about that. Like, Game Pass has been great because I've found a few titles where I've said, yeah, I wouldn't pay full price for that game. I really wouldn't. I enjoyed it, but I wouldn't pay full price for that game.
I think the big thing you hit on there too is like they're not only fighting for your budget, but like they're fighting for your time in general, mm-hmm. right? You're not competing just for, you know, against other games. You're competing against Netflix. You're competing against live sporting events or watching TV or going to a game or going to a concert or hanging out with your family. They're fighting for your time. And last time I checked, there's still only 24 hours in a day. And on top of that, you know, if you have a full-time job, that is anywhere between 8 to 12 hours a day that you're working, if not more in certain fields. Then you want to come home and you want to relax. And how do you relax after a long, stressful day? Some people play a calm, relaxing video game. Some people watch TV. Some people want to go to a local cafe and have a cup of coffee and listen to live music. Whatever it is, these games are competing for all of that time, for every penny in your budget. You know, like myself, I'm a season ticket holder for the Washington Nationals, right? So I am committing a lot of money to a form of entertainment that involves not only me going to a game now for 2 to 2.5 hours, but driving up there, paying for parking, paying for food, and then just the entire ballpark experience itself. Is that overall 4 hours that I'm investing into that experience better spent playing your video game? And like you said, I would argue that there's not a lot of video games out there that capture people's attention like that anymore. Mm-hmm. Whereas with Game Pass, it's like, you know, hey, I have a spare hour here. Let me take a look at this game real quick. Oh, I kind of like this. And then you go and you carve out more time in it. You're not going to have that discussion if you have to make the decision between, you know, I can hang out with some friends. I can spend time with my partner. I can go do X, Y, and Z for $70 for a real in-life experience, mm-hmm. creating memories or getting to know someone or whatever, or pay $70 for a game I'm going to play 30 minutes here, 2 weeks later come back and play another hour, then 4 weeks later come back and play 15 minutes. It's tough. You know, there's more and more media to consume out there, and they're not just competing against their own industry anymore.
Well, I also want to say this. Like, we were cooped up for so long with COVID. Like, we were inside for so long with COVID that, and this goes back to what you said, John, people want to go outside. They want to experience life again. And if it just means sitting down in a park and watching a bunch of birds for like an hour or so, let that person do that.
Even like, worse, seriously. The cherry blossom peak bloom.
Yeah.
People went to go see a dead stump named Stumpy on the tidal basin, because Stumpy was going to get removed and turn into mulch because they're redoing the seawalls there. Stumpy.
Yeah.
A dead tree with one living branch.
Yeah.
Guess what? Video games lost to that. That should tell you the state of some of these games.
And I'm sorry, but there are times when I just want to go outside. Like, I don't want to be cooped up in the house playing a video game. And I hate to say that on a video game podcast, but, you know, just COVID changed a lot of that. Yeah. Like, video games were great during COVID because it helped us keep our sanity. But now it's like, now that things are open and, you know, baseball events are great. Like, you know, Saturday we were at an Orioles game and we had a great time. Or Sunday we were at an Orioles game and we had a great time. And, you know, the last thing I was thinking about was video games.
Like, I think there's definitely a balance to a lot of this. And I think when it comes down to the COVID stuff, things have definitely changed, right? And that's unfortunately also why we're seeing so many layoffs throughout the whole industry right now as well, because people overhire during those times when a lot of people are playing. Now, we are seeing a spike where games are coming back up. They are one of the biggest entertainments in the world, much, much bigger than sports, music, and movies combined right now as far as the industry goes. So they're giant. Unfortunately, a lot of that is a mobile gaming market as well, fortunately or unfortunately, depending how you look at it, who you are. I know some people are not the biggest fan of mobile games, but that is where a lot of that market growth is being driven right now as well. Now, with that being said, we do enjoy our games from time to time. I know you both enjoy quite a few with me here and there. Whether you're outside or inside, plenty of these are accessible, especially with cloud now being a thing, with portable handhelds like the PlayStation Portal or Portal, the Steam Deck, obviously a very popular one, Asus ROG, and so on and so forth. And some of these games will be playable on those. So let's dive into some of the games we might see in the Xbox Showcase coming up on Sunday. Based on what we already know is releasing throughout the rest of this year, we have at least 10 games/expansions that should be making their way here. A number of these I know you guys will want to touch on. We did touch a little bit on some of the RTS style games earlier on in the show. So I think we'll just dive right into those as well as the 4X games. Those are Age of Mythology Retold and Ara History Untold. Retold and Untold. I know both of these were on John's radar. John is a big fan of that particular genre. Hoping for StarCraft, but these are some that will definitely be coming his way. I'm excited for this. I think Age of Mythology is a game that we haven't seen a new version of in quite a while. Age of Empires is doing really well, especially kind of the way they dove into the historical aspect with their new campaign series. And then Ara History Untold is from the big popular, or kind of like the lead devs per se, of Civilization V. They peeled off from the Sid Meier's games and have wanted to create something of their own, something a little bit more modern of a history tell. So I'm curious to see how that one does as well. Both of these I'm pretty excited for, but John, I know we'll let you lead this section because both of them are quite high on your list.
Yeah, it's great. I think ours is a little bit higher just because of how big of a fan of Civ I am. And the fact that the developers of Civ 5 are behind this game, it's incredible, and have it playing here on the stream for you right now. It just looks great. And as someone who likes these kind of RTS games, and then you add a historical aspect to it, I mean, it's unique. You know, when Age of Empires 4 came out, a lot of people complained about, they put historical cutscenes in the campaign. Why would they do that? But the way they did it, Joey, was they took the image of where the area happened present day and they drew over it to kind of give you a look in the past. It was so cool. It was so different. And maybe it's just because I'm a history buff, but to me, the fact that I got to play a video game, I got to play a scenario, a historical, major historical event that shaped humanity to the where it is today, and then I get to see it in a video of what that area looks like now and how it would have looked like with that drawing over. Like, that was incredible, being able to play it and then see it like that. Just, it's another way of experiencing history, and for some people, reading the book is a great way to do it. You know, I'm not opposed to that, but if you're going to sit here and tell me I can lead a charge like Saladin charging on Jerusalem and recreating that whole thing, that's incredible. That's absolutely amazing. Like, there's movies that do a great job on it. Kingdom of Heaven is one that comes to mind. You know, I will rewatch that movie until the end of time because it was so freaking good. But you pair it up with a video game that can do both, makes it even better. And that's the great thing about both of these games, is that you get to experience history through a different medium while having fun and playing a type of game you enjoy. Joey, you and I were playing Age of Empires last night. We tried out two new civilizations that we're wanting to get really, you know, get good at, really. You know, you played a different era of the Chinese, correct?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And I was playing the Byzantine Empire. Why? Because the Byzantine Empire is one of my favorite periods of history, and it's a very dynamic period of history of Constantinople before present-day Istanbul. It's so wild, but you get to play as that civilization. You get to take a peek into history and kind of see in some ways what it was like in some sense. So I'm kind of cool with it. That's just me. I'm happy for both of these. I'm looking forward to playing both of them. I think they're going to be incredible. I have a lot of high hopes for Ara. Age of Mythology Retold is going to be really good too. But Ara is probably the number. If I'm saying pick one of these two, Ara is the one on my list.
Eric, are any of these on your list as well, good sir?
Oh, yeah. I was a huge fan of Age of Empires 4. I love that game so much, and I love the history behind it. I love the recreations, like John was saying, how like they drew over what modern-day cities to show, like, you know, battle plans and how armies marched and everything during these battles. I thought that was amazing. I also loved the little vignettes that we got when it came to the weapons too, like, and learning about the weapons and the different tactics in warfare. Like, one of my favorite missions, John, I think you and I were talking one night in a voice chat when I was doing the one mission, and it was literally a 7v7 joust tournament that happened in the war of, I believe it was the Hundred Years' War. Like, it was the Battle of Chivalry. Like, I thought that was awesome. Like, I thought that was so much fun to do. So, I love Age of Empires. Ara History Untold, I think, is going to be great because you can put different twists on history. Like, you know, you could have the Byzantine Empire take over the world and then go to the moon if you want to. Like, you can do all of that fun stuff, it looks like. See, John's now thinking about it.
I'm just thinking, you take it from Age of Empires, that I'm going to buy that rocket with some olive oil.
Olive oil?
Yeah. And then Age of Mythology, I love mythology, and I want to see that RTS with mythological creatures and mythological armies. I think that's awesome. And bring it on, and make it day one Game Pass. I will play it on my PC and on my console. Like, I am so excited for those two titles.
Funny you should say. I really think that's one of the Game Pass.
I think that's one of the fun parts of mythology, especially, right? Like, you can pull out those big creatures that you can't really see in an Age of Empires. On top of that, you can throw in leader abilities. There's some of that to some degree. Like, Joan of Arc exists in Age of Empires 4, but like Zeus, like with a lightning strike or something, I think could be a fun way to play that out. I know Medusa's in there. She's been revealed as a character. I feel like they revealed one more. It might have been like Mars. I think it was Mars. It was someone like God of War, something like that. Definitely like a very big like player as far as aggression goes. But overall, yeah, I'm excited for it. I think it has a lot of fun elements to it, and bringing in kind of that magical sense adds a whole nother implement or thing to implement into the battlefield, right? Like with skill shots and different things like that. So it'll be fun to watch how that all plays out. With that being said, Starfield DLC is also on the way. Behind the scenes, I've heard some very good things from playtesters on this front as well. Shattered Space is going to be that DLC, supposedly releasing in September of this year. And we do have a little bit of some insight into this. It's going to include new story content, new locations, new gear, and much more. Again, nothing really surprising given what we get from most DLCs and major expansions. The one interesting part here of what they're going to dive into, though, players on Reddit are speculating that it's going to be the Varun Starfield faction. We didn't see a ton of those in the main gameplay. Again, I have not finished the mission. I have talked to people who have finished the full storyline. I get sidetracked by a side quest, go figure. As I'm walking through the city and I hear someone whisper about a secret package and someone else whispering about some clandestine meeting, and I have to attend them all before I continue the main quest line. Come on, guys. You know how it works around here for the achievement hunter life of me. But overall, I love the idea of them exploring something that was left a little bit unexplored in the main story. And I feel like they announced this at launch that there's going to be an expansion. This was probably the plan all along. They realized they needed more time to polish and they didn't have enough time to put all the content they wanted. So they built this out. I think we get a full new city as well, guys. I think on top of that, like we have like New Atlantis, obviously a big fleshed out city. Aquila City and a few others in the game. I think we're going to get a full fleshed out city here, potentially a more alien like city. And I'm curious to see what that ends up developing. But John, I think you're the only one of the three of us that finished the game in and of itself. So go a little spoiler free per se here. But what are you looking forward to? And are you hoping it goes in a certain direction?
I have no clue where they're going with it. look, at the end of the day, I've gone through New Game Plus 7 times. And I really don't know where they're going to go with it. There's really no way to talk about it without spoiling the end of the game. Spoiler free. I guess what comes next? You know, you reach end game. You get the big answer to the big question. Sorry for being generic here, but this is a spoiler-free edition. So once you have the answer to the question, obviously there's other questions that come after it. Joey, this is so difficult.
It's interesting, right? Because so many more people are diving into Starfield. They just saw a huge player count jump in May. I think once this expansion is released, a lot of other people are going to be like, okay, it's had a bunch of patches. It's had a bunch of fixes. It's time to dive in before the expansion. So unfortunately, I think a lot of people are going to experience it for the first time.
Yeah.
Maybe fortunately, but unfortunately for you having to explain your predictions.
But no, all I'm going to say is the main storyline, some people complain, was a little quick. I get it. That's also probably the reason why they had a bajillion side quests whispering in Joey's ears about a secret package. But other than that, you know, the main story was good. And when you get to New Game Plus, you have the option of replaying the entire story campaign. And there's different interactions you have based upon things you did during the end prior to reaching the area where you start New Game Plus. This is very difficult. I hope you people understand this.
Choices matter, ladies and gentlemen.
Choices are incredibly important in this game. But yeah, I just don't, personally, I don't know where the story can go after you reach that moment you walk through to New Game Plus. Spoiler. You know, so that I don't know where the story can go after that. So I'm very intrigued.
I like it. Eric, any thoughts on Shattered Space and what we might see there?
So I still have not finished this game.
Oh, come on!
Like you, Joey, I have been distracted by a bunch of side quests. I am, where I left off, I was actually in the middle of one of the story missions. And I'm really enjoying the game. really enjoying it. I think it's by far Bethesda's most ambitious title that they've ever done. Honestly, I think that this is just an incredible story. I'm excited to see where it goes. I will eventually pick up the expansion after I beat the game. But I'm having a lot of fun, you know, doing the side quests. Like I finished that entire industrial espionage side quest, and
that was so good.
Every second
that is good.
I'm doing a bunch of UC stuff right now too, which is awesome. Like the whole pirate mission with the UC is fantastic, and I'm not going to go into spoilers. But I'm loving this game, and I'm just afraid that, like, when I get to the end, like, I know I'm going to be excited, but at the same time, I think that I'm going to have, like, this... I don't think I'm emotionally ready for this story to end because of, like, how intriguing it is and, like, how invested I am in these characters and in this world. I'm not going to talk about it. There was a reveal that blew my mind recently that also made me kind of want to throw my controller when it happened. But I loved it. I loved every second of it. So yeah, bring on more Starfield. Like, seriously, keep this game going. Keep it going.
I like it, and I hope they continue to support it. I mean, I think my big wish list ask for it would be to enter some alien races in there outside of just flora and fauna. I would love to see an actual alien race introduced, which we really haven't seen too much of. They definitely lean more into the humanity side of things. But hopefully with a new planet, we might have a little bit more, creativity in that sense. Or they push boundaries a little bit more. Potentially how they decide to open that up, we'll have to wait and see. But I do think we get a new trailer for this one, probably with some gameplay and probably a release date come the showcase on Sunday. Next up, in terms of big releases that are still set to come this year, this one a little bit smaller in scope. That's Towerborn. This was voted as the best game at Gamescom this past year as far as people that went hands-on with it. A lot of people thoroughly enjoyed this game. Kind of has like a Studio Ghibli meets Castle Crashers vibe to it. So very Studio Ghibli in its art style, Castle Crashers in its play style. It's four players that are playing together cooperatively on kind of a shared screen where you're kind of moving across, you're fighting up against big bosses, you're pulling in loot, eventually upgrading your character, whether it's abilities, whether it's armor and swords and such, weapons, depending on what weapon type you end up playing in. I think this game looks fun. I think it's just going to be a good time. Do I think it's going to pull in a ton of players? No, I really don't. Do I think a lot of people will check it out when it drops on Game Pass day one? I do think quite a few people will. But I think it's just going to be one of those fun things, right? You're like hanging out in Discord chat. You have three or four other people in there. Let's just run a little bit in Towerborn. Super chill. It's cooperative, so you're not competing against anyone. You're just kind of competing against the PvE, the player versus environment aspects. And there's leveling and there's different events that are going to happen. I think there's weekly events or monthly events that you can choose to participate in. You can choose not to. And I think it's just a very fun, chill game that is going to be a great one to release as a palate cleanser this year. I don't know if you guys have seen too much of Towerborn yet. I don't think it's as widely publicized. But anyone else want to say anything on Towerborn or just wait for more to be revealed?
I'm going to wait. I know it's been on your radar for a while. And from what I remember seeing, it looked fun. I'm always down for Studio Ghibli vibes, man. Like,
yeah, I know the art style definitely has some of that when you look at the character creation stuff, especially.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I'll wait and see more.
I like it. I like it. This next one is due to the acquisition of Activision Blizzard. John, I know this one is definitely on your radar for this year, as well as the beta this week that hopefully you'll be able to dive into this weekend. World of Warcraft, The War Within. This on top of some other live service games like Fallout 76, Elder Scrolls Online, etc., all getting expansions. But this is the one we're really going to take some time to dive into because, John, I know you're stoked for this.
So Blizzard decided to do something crazy, and that's announced the next three expansions for World of Warcraft at the same time in what they're calling the World Saga. It's insane. It doesn't matter. The War Within is coming. Anduin is no longer a bleep. He's actually going to be a king for a change instead of running away. That's kind of nice. But nonetheless, the direction they're taking this story is finally getting back on track after the bomb that was Battle for Azeroth that made absolutely no sense. Recently, I just did the Nyalotha raid for funsies, and that raid was incredible. The other raids prior to that, awful. The story, completely garbage. Shadowlands was so bad they cut the final expansion, the final content patch, because it was just absolute garbage. Dragonflight has been a nice return to what World of Warcraft is about. And now we're going to get, I really don't know what we're going to be getting in this expansion other than, you know, we have a new big baddie, in the form of Xalatath, who, if you are a WoW player, you're like, oh, that sounds familiar. Yeah. It's the Shadow Priest's, Legion artifact weapon, that was cursed by N'Zoth. That has now taken control of a Night Elf's body because, let's be honest, the Night Elves are only good for being possessed by evil. Spoken like a Horde player. Nonetheless, she's now the big baddie. She's working with the old gods. There's going to be it's going to be super voidy. So if you like the void, if you like battle between light and dark, that's going to start in this expansion and going to continue through next expansion, which is called
World of Warcraft Midnight,
properly titled. It's going to be incredible, right? This is going to be the big crescendo to this story that's been going for 20 years now in World of Warcraft, really longer if you include the Warcraft RTSs that set up World of Warcraft. It's going to come to an end. It wasn't, the end of the Lich King in Wrath of the Lich King. It wasn't the killing of his soul in Shadowlands, which was just an absolute travesty by Blizzard. It's this next three expansion cycle is going to be the end, if you will, of that current storyline. That's what's exciting. And the fact that they're willing to be so bold to go out on the line and tell us exactly what the next 9 years are going to look like, that's insane. I don't think any studio is going to be like, hey, look, in the next 9 years, this is what we're going to be doing. I hope you like it. It was absolutely nutty. And on top of it, Blizzard, these trailers, second to none, on top. They're incredible. Absolutely amazing. I want to see more World of Warcraft War Within content coming out. I'm excited for the beta that I can't play until this weekend because I got a big boy job and I got to do big boy things. And then on the weekend, I'll play video games. But this is incredible. I'm super hyped for it. I want to see more. I want to know more.
Yeah, I'm so for it. I think it's going to be very good. And like you said, John, it was just a bold play for them to come out and say, hey, this is not only our next expansion, but our next three expansions. I think that really shows that Blizzard is looking forward. They're looking to build a cohesive story versus a little bit of what we've got recently where it kind of feels a little bit more segmented from expansion to expansion. This shows they're kind of casting that wider net, looking at things from a wider scope. And I think overall, it's just going to make things much more fluid for players, not only from the lore perspective with the story flowing together more, but also technically speaking, mechanically, I think they'll be able to build out abilities and whether they go the artifact route or whatever it may be with this expansion, I think it'll flow better from one into the other more than we've seen in recent ones.
Get rid of this stupid sword.
And again, guys, I mean, there's a bunch of these other live service games. We're not going to run into all of them. Diablo 4 Vessel of Hatred will definitely be there. That one comes out later this year, I think November. Fallout 76 has another expansion coming up. Elder Scrolls Online, I think, is like the Gold Road or something is their next one. So there are quite a few. Overwatch 2, you might get a new character reveal, different things like that as well. But we're not going to spend all the time on those because there are plenty of other games to cover of what we know coming out, plus what we speculate we might see as well. Call of Duty Black Ops, we also touched a little bit on earlier. Do you guys want to touch any more on that? I know you're not the biggest COD fans. I am excited for this one. I think it's a nice return for the series. Also, the first kind of game published under the Xbox umbrella per se. Now, obviously, it has been developed for years before Xbox acquired Activision Blizzard, but this game has been developed for 4 years. I think that's the longest Call of Duty cycle we've seen. Most of those going about 3 years over the last 15, 20 years of development, I think. So it's definitely been given a little bit more room to breathe than typical. On top of that, all of the developers have been involved in some way in this Call of Duty title. for better or for worse, depending on how you want to look at that. But it has been all hands on deck getting this one ready. So I am excited to see how it does. I hope it lands well. I hope it is a nice return to form for Call of Duty. Again, you can argue that this series has kind of worn its welcome out a little bit here and there, as you can do the same with FIFA and Madden and all the sports games from EA. We always ask them to innovate, and sometimes they fall short. Typically, they fall short. We'll see what Activision does here with Call of Duty Black Ops 6. Next up is a newer IP, this one coming from the Pillars of Eternity universe and the legendary Obsidian Games, Avowed. This is on a lot of people's list, one that a lot of people are excited for. My personal opinion, the gameplay looked a little bit choppy when they showed it in January. The sword skills did not look like they connected as well as I wanted. The environments were freaking gorgeous, though, and I love the different species that they showed off. From what I have heard, that gameplay is much sharpened. What they did over the last 6 months has been really focused on that sword play and that magic play and making sure all the combat feels very fluid compared to what we saw in January. Now, again, that's word of mouth. We'll see what it actually ends up looking like when it does come out. But I, for one, am excited for this game. I love the idea of jumping into a big fantasy epic RPG. It's something people have been wanting with something like an Elder Scrolls 6. We have Skyrim still, and it's going to be remastered over and over. I think you can even play on Samsung fridges at this point. But overall, people are looking for that new big RPG, that Witcher, that Skyrim. And it looks like this one might end up delivering for people, giving those classic customization elements of choosing your class, choosing the way you play out your missions and abilities and everything throughout the combat, throughout the world. I'm pretty excited for this one, to be completely honest. Hesitantly excited because the combat didn't look as sharp to me, but I'm hoping it did shore up. Eric, I think you've mentioned this one's on your list to some degree as well.
Yeah, it really is. I was really captured by that first trailer and how lighthearted it actually was. It wasn't as dark as when we got that original reveal trailer during the Game Awards. Mm-hmm. I liked how funny it was. I liked the personalities of the characters and everything. And you can still have epic fantasy while having those lighthearted moments. I mean, Lord of the Rings is like one of the perfect examples of that. So I think from what we've seen of the game, it looks fantastic. I will agree that the animations looked pretty choppy when we got that footage back in January. But if they are cleaning it up, if they are about to show this thing, bring it on. Like, bring on this game, bring on this universe. I'm really looking forward to it. I have not played Pillars of Eternity yet, even though it's on Game Pass. But, you know, I got, like John said, I have big boy job and big boy duties to attend to, so it's a little bit tough. But I am looking forward to this one, and it'll be nice to get another Obsidian fantasy RPG.
I like it. I like it. John, you going to give this one a go?
No.
Okay. Plain and simple. You heard it here, folks. I don't know. I could see John eventually downloading this one.
Maybe.
But it definitely, it hits some of your like war, not warlord. What am I thinking of? What's the class you play in Warlord? I mean, you have many classes, but.
I'm currently playing Shadow Priest.
Warlock? Warlock. Warlock is the other one I'm thinking of. It definitely has some warlocky elements to it from some of the gameplay we've seen. So we'll keep an eye out for that one. Again, we don't have a release date. You will get a release date very soon. I think it is going to come somewhere around that November timeframe. Next up is Flight Simulator 2024. I honestly have no idea what this game is. I thought initially it was an expansion of Flight Simulator 2020. Now I don't know if it's going to be a full new game or an expansion, but more or less it's Flight Simulator with jobs. So you can do like rescue helicopter missions. Maybe you can deliver Annie's bagels down the street. I don't 100% know what is all involved in this. I think there's also like firefighter elements to it too. So like forest fires, you can run the like plane with the water. I honestly haven't looked too much into the actual rescue helicopter plane situations. But there's a lot of that going on here. I don't know if you can play like a fighter pilot on a deck of a battleship. That would be kind of cool. But yeah, overall, it's kind of exploring jobs in aircrafts, whether it be helicopters, planes, and so on and so forth. I think it's a cool element. I don't think, and John, correct me if I'm wrong, I know you know Flight Sim a lot better than I do. There's never really been anything like this in previous Flight Sims, correct?
The job aspect, no. Okay. And I hate to break it to you, Joey, you could launch yourself off of an aircraft carrier back in 1998 with Microsoft also, and along with X-Plane back in the day. You could even fly the space shuttle coming back in from orbit. on X-Plane. Yep. So that wouldn't be anything new. But the new thing here is the jobs, right? And when this was originally announced, it is a standalone game. It is a separate game. It is a full updated Microsoft Flight Sim game with these title with these different elements in it. The great thing about this is it explores different careers in aviation. Aviation is so rich in different career paths. You don't have to be a pilot. You don't have to be a flight attendant. You don't have to work at a gate of an airport. Like that, those are great jobs to have. Those are incredibly fruitful in the aviation career field. But there's other things, like you said, delivering Annie's bagels, apparently, probably via drone from Amazon on 2-hour delivery, fighting fires in a plane, you know, dropping chemicals over a forest fire, or being a privately hired pilot for a company. You're flying corporate. You're
a VIP service per se.
Yeah, kind of. But like, there's so many different things you can do in the aviation industry, and that's what this game is going to allow you to see. Is that, you know, you don't have to go to school or go join the military to become a pilot and to try to get in the aviation industry. There's other ways of doing it. So I think it's great. I think the diversity of aircraft they're going to have in it is going to be incredible. It's not just going to be your typical Airbuses. It's not going to be your typical Boeings, except the only difference between Boeing planes in game and in real life is that in game the doors stay on. The fact that you can fly a helicopter to an oil rig out in the middle of the Gulf Coast, that's kind of cool. watch on your screen right now. You're taking a power generator off of a rig onto a supply vessel. Right now, you can transport organs or patients via aircraft. Angel flights are a real thing in real life, where life-saving organs are flown from destination to hospitals for organ transplants. You can do that in here too. Skydiving, building towers, building power lines. You want to transport the airframe of an Airbus 320, you got to fly the Airbus Beluga. I mean, come on. There's just so many things you can do here, and it's so cool, and it's going to really open the eyes of a lot of people that want to get into aviation but don't know of all these different cool, unique jobs you can have. Or you can be absolutely crazy and be a Red Bull plane racer and drill around those pylons. I know that's crazy, but it also looks a lot of fun too. Now I'm going to turn it over to Eric, my other fellow brother in aviation.
Yes.
I have my pilot's license. He's living my dream of working at an airport. Eric, talk to me about what you think about this game from the perspective of someone who is in the aviation industry.
So, yeah, I work on the ground for an airline. I'm not going to talk about which airline I work for because it doesn't really matter right now. But what? Yeah, thank you, John. Thank you. But I love this game. As somebody who is in the aviation industry, who does not have their pilot's license, this is a way to get me possibly interested in doing that. I also love going down to the ramp and seeing all of the different planes come in and everything, and driving by general aviation and seeing like those private charter planes that you will be able to do. So as somebody who works in the aviation industry, I love this game. I think it is a huge recruitment tool for the aviation industry. I will tell you that right now, but I will also say it has brought so many different people, like a lot of big streamers on Twitch, just stream Flight Simulator because they just want to like do like really nice flights and all of that, you know, like if you want to do the 2-hour Miami to wherever, you can do that in Flight Sim. However, I want to like speed up after I get the plane up in the air. I want to go back to the landing so I can try to see if I can land at these airports, which is not fun. But anyway, I love these games. I love the various jobs that you're going to be able to do in this brand new standalone game. The mountain rescue I thought was really cool too, with the helicopter. I love the aerial construction. John sold me on the Airbus Beluga and like flying that Airbus frame to like another airport. I think that's awesome. Yeah, as somebody who works in the aviation industry, like, this is a big evangelism tool for our industry.
Agreed.
And this will get people in. It's great. Like, working at an airport, I see it all. I really get to see it all. And I've experienced a bunch of jobs within this airline, and they're all rewarding, man. They're all rewarding. Whether you're a pilot or a flight attendant or you work on the ground, you're part of, like, this big, massive experience. And there's nothing like, I like to say, when I fly for free, you know, I fly for free, but it's standby. I like to say, yeah, I'm taking the company jet to see my parents for a couple of days, you know, like it's a great way to get people into the aviation industry, but also a great way to have fun. Yeah, I love doing the glider missions in Flight Sim 2020. I think those are a lot of fun.
Yeah, I think this will be really cool. And I'm curious if they do integrate some of the stuff we have from Flight Sim 2020, if they do move some of those regular flight servers over to this new platform, or if they do keep them as two separate things. It is interesting they only updated the year. They didn't add something like Job Edition or anything like that onto this edition. So I am curious what that ends up meaning for Flight Simulator 2020 as we move forward. With that being said,
I will say it is normal for Flight Sim to do that, just changing the year like that. That is totally normal going all the way back to the 90s.
Yeah,
that is super normal, but adding the jobs in as a separate portion would be something completely different than we've ever seen.
It would, which is why it's a completely separate game.
Right. So that's what I mean. I'm curious if they do move the 2020 stuff over as well, or if they do keep them as separate games, but only with the year branding being the difference.
Just keep the Top Gun Maverick DLC. That's all I'm going to say.
I never did try the Dune DLC. I wish I would have tried that one as well.
I flew the Ornithopter. It was a lot of fun. It was actually a lot of fun.
I'll just say history has shown that the expansions that come out for that flight sim do not carry over with past flight sims.
I could see that.
But they're fun.
Okay, the last game that we can almost guarantee that is going to be there because it's supposed to release this year. A lot of people estimating right around December. Indiana Jones and the Great Circle. This was a big surprise when it was announced initially from Machine Games. Since then, we've seen gameplay, and that has been even more surprising with them deciding to go with the first-person perspective here with Indiana's Whip. Overall, a lot of people excited for this game, kind of bringing a Tomb Raider-esque aspect. Something is Tomb Raider meets Uncharted meets, obviously, Indiana Jones, and then taking with that first-person's perspective here, throwing a lot of people off with the kind of whip animations and how that's going to play out. A lot of people are excited for this one. I'm a little hesitant up front just because of the first person aspect of it. But Indiana Jones as a franchise has shown it can do pretty well. It has definitely lasted the test of time, albeit the last movie didn't do the greatest numbers in theaters. I am curious to see how this one develops, especially with Todd Howard being the lead on there. We've seen him obviously do amazing things with the Elder Scrolls franchise, with Fallout, now with Starfield as well. To take the lead here with the story, I think we can at least assume the story will be very good overall with Todd directing it. As far as the gameplay, again, my hesitation is the first-person perspective, but I hope it does play out well, and I definitely will be playing this one when it drops in December. Eric, I know, is a big Disney fan. I'm sure this one is high up on your list as well.
Yeah, I call this Nazi Punching Simulator 2024. that's what I call this. I am looking forward to this game, especially because it is going to be on Game Pass and we will be able to play this game on day one. Machine Games is known for these alternate history type games anyway because of Wolfenstein. So this is right up their alley. This is, you know, this is what they do. This is their bread and butter. However, I will say this. I am not a fan of the first person either. I'm not really a fan. I think that you could have gone the third person route and still made this an Indiana Jones meets Uncharted meets Tomb Raider. Now, I will say this. I don't want to see Indy free climb like Nathan Drake does or like Lara Croft does. But I think there is potential there, especially like when it comes to solving puzzles. I think it's better in third person because you can actually get a better look at the room and what you're trying to solve. But I am looking forward to this one. I love that all of the text is that classic Indiana Jones text. And when it said executive producer Todd Howard in the trailer for it, it had that classic Paramount Pictures executive producer text. I think that's really cool. Yeah, looking forward to this one. I think the whip mechanic is going to be the most interesting part to this, because I was looking at the trailer again the other day, and just the whip mechanic just felt off a little bit, because like he would whip and like maybe
would he would nay nay?
yeah.
I'm glad we were nay-nay.
But like when he would fire off the whip. Like, you would see it, like, a few centimeters off the target, but yet he was still able to, like, pull that opposing character or pull that NPC in. And to me, like, it just felt a little bit off. So hopefully they've had time to polish it as well.
Yeah, I mean, they've had at least over a year since that. Or when by the time it releases, it'll be over a year since that footage was cut. So I'm thinking a lot of that will be polished up, hopefully, before launch. You bring up another good point, though, Eric, and one I didn't really think too much about. When we think third person with the puzzles, it is much easier to solve puzzles in, say, Tomb Raider and Uncharted in third person. And I kind of like the idea of that in first person, now that you mentioned it. I like the idea of more difficult puzzles, not being able to easily see the traps you're coming up upon unless you're really like scanning the environment in a first person perspective. So I feel like that could be one advantage I may have overlooked to it moving into a first person perspective. John, also over to you. I know you have thoroughly enjoyed the Wolfenstein series. What are your thoughts on Indiana Jones and Machine Games trying their hand at a new IP?
Yes and no. My issue with Wolfenstein has been that they've gone way off the deep end on some of the theories of the Nazis and their ties to the occult and their ties to zombies and stupid crap. I really hope they don't do that to Indiana Jones. I'm not a huge Indiana Jones fan to begin with. But that being said, I don't have a problem with it being first person. The whip mechanic doesn't really bother me that much. And I kind of like the idea of it being first person because it gives you that real life experience. Last time I checked, friends, I can't eject my soul and watch my body from the third person from an angle up here. So if I get to play a game where I have to, like, when I walk into a room in real life, first thing I do is I look around. You know what? I have no problem doing that in a video game. There's other first person games. I mean, how many times, Joey, have you been playing Call of Duty? Hopefully none. Or any other first-person game, and you know you have to get around that corner, and there's something in your gut that tells you you should probably do a little peeksy-poo before you go around full force around that there corner.
Peeksy-poo.
Yeah, so you kind of like, you know, you W forward a little bit. You shimmy your mouse to the left. You kind of do one of these things. Like, you're playing a video game, but in real life you go at the same time. How many times have you walked up in the middle of DC in the middle of the night and you got to go around a corner and you know you're in a sketchy part of the neighborhood and you don't really want to take that corner at full confidence? You just kind of go, okay, cool, I can walk, you know? You do it in a video game too. Like, to me, like, the argument over first versus third person, especially in these kinds of games, blows my mind. Wolfenstein was all done in first person and it was fine. It was totally fine. Whether you're killing Nazis or killing mega Hitler Nazi 2.0 in 2095 because he came back from Mars after the great Nazi expedition to Pluto. I don't freaking know. You know, whatever it is, I really think people are making a bigger deal out of it than what it really is.
No, I get it. I get it. But clearly, you know, I do like that they lean kind of into the occult thing because that's what Indiana Jones has always done.
Yeah.
Like, Raiders of the Lost Ark leans into the occult. Like, all of them lean into, like, some sort of occult or mystical thing when it comes to Indy's adventures. So I love that we're getting that. here. I'm really interested to see what the Great Circle is. Also, I will say this. I think Troy Baker sounds amazing as Indy. I think he sounds just like Harrison Ford. So looking forward to this one. Hopefully this is a nice little holiday treat for us to hold us over into next year's games.
I like it. I like it. So again, guys, those are all the games that we have a very good feeling will be coming out throughout the rest of this year and hopefully getting release dates come this showcase on Sunday. Now, with that being said, there are some other games out there that we haven't heard of in quite a while. I think we'll see at least three or so of these, maybe more, maybe all of them. But I'm pretty confident at least three of these will end up in the showcase on Sunday. I'm just going to list these out, guys. And if we want to touch on any in particular, we can do so and then move right along. Perfect Dark is a game a lot of people are excited about. There's been rumors of troubled development, and then there's been rumors that it's going really well in development. And no one's really quite sure what's going on with that game. They have tasked Crystal Dynamics, the developer behind Tomb Raider, to come on and assist the initiative with Perfect Dark. So it's the initiative, and then it's Crystal Dynamics, who have both worked together before in different capacities as far as co-workers being at different companies together, with the director of the initiative previously being the director at Crystal Dynamics. And again, I think Perfect Dark and Lara Croft can go together pretty well there with Joanna. And I'm curious to see how that translates over into a game. So again, Perfect Dark, one we're waiting to hear from. Everwild from Rare is another one a lot of people have been very curious about. We've had two trailers over the couple of years that it's been announced. Really haven't seen too much else. It looks kind of like a very pretty game with a lot of nature aspects to it, but no one really knows what to expect with Everwild. I think that's another one that could potentially come up either in this showcase or in the near future. Contraband from the people behind Just Cause. Unfortunately, they just had some layoffs. Contraband is supposedly still in development and still continuing to make its way out. That is supposed to be a co-op heisty type of game. State of Decay 3. I know we have some big zombie fans here in chat, but State of Decay 3 is supposedly going to be a very new iteration of that franchise that we have not seen too much of outside of a little teaser. And then last but not least, and we don't have a teaser to play for you here with us live on Twitch, but Gears of War 6, guys. We know Gears of War 5 ended on a cliffhanger. We won't go into spoiler details on that front, but Gears of War 6, I think, has a very good shot at potentially making an appearance at this showcase as well. John or Eric, either one of you, feel free to jump in here if there's any of these games in particular that notice your fancy. For me, Perfect Dark and Gears of War are definitely the two that stick out on the list.
For me, it's Everwild and Gears of War. I want to see what Rare's doing with Everwild. They've had massive success with Sea of Thieves, and I want to see them do something different. And this looks like it could definitely be that. Gear 6, yeah, 5 ends on a massive cliffhanger. And I'm ready for it. Bring on more of Kate Diaz, JD Phoenix, all those people. So, yeah.
Love it. John, what's tickling your fancy, per se? Is it Joanna Dark over there?
Is the cliffhanger in Gear 6 when you get to go past the glitch in the first 30 minutes of the game?
Oh, my gosh. Weird. You're so toxic.
that's strange. Joey, I'm about to trigger the entire fan base. I hope Gears of 6 is announced on every platform. Oh, gosh.
I would love that. I would love that.
I'm sorry.
I would love that, too.
I just made a bunch of Xbox people shake in their background.
John is waving.
That's my wife in the background. She's trying to take a picture of the cat because he's like literally right here.
Oh, that's awesome.
I thought it was a picture of you being on the bestest gaming podcast in
the
world.
If she wants to take a picture of me being on the bestest gaming podcast in the world.
Hey,
yeah, there she is. We could do that.
Put her on, Eric. You're gone. No.
That's it. You're stepping in for the rest of the show. No, she's going to bed.
valid point here. Gears of War 6. I just don't care. That franchise has never spoken to me. Perfect Dark is the one I like. I remember playing Perfect Dark back on the N64. Boomer. It's a great game. I'm super excited for it. Everwild, I'm kind of interested for too. Contraband, not so much. State of Decay 3, didn't decay enough the first two times. We're good.
I don't care about State of Decay. Like, seriously, Xbox, kill that franchise. Please, kill that franchise. Let it die. Please just let it die. Like,
I'm not a big State of Decay player either. I have heard this one is going to be vastly different from the other ones.
Oh my
but
God,
with that being said, I mean, it's still a zombie franchise, right? Like, there are a lot of zombie games out there vying for attention, which seems to be a theme of tonight's show. I don't know if State of Decay 3 has enough to pull attention from those other zombie games away. And again, zombies is a trope that has been done quite a few times now. A lot of people do zombie games pretty regularly. Feels like zombie games are just a very, very common thing. So we'll see what it has. I think graphically, it's going to look very nice. I'm curious how they have changed up the overall gameplay of it. If they've leaned more into maybe the horror aspect versus the exploration, maybe it's a combination of both now. I don't really know, but it is one game I know a number of people have kind of touted as something that's going to look very different and something that might pull in some attention here moving forward. Some other games that are coming sooner than later. These are some games we've seen trailers for before, but we don't know too much of, except for one of these. One of these was leaked, so we're going to include it in this section. But South of Midnight is a game I am freaking stoked for. I think the initial trailer from that, from Compulsion Games, who is a studio who we haven't really seen too much from. They've done, I think their most recent game was We Happy Few, which was quite a few years ago. Contrast was a very interesting game I played from them as an achievement hunter game. It's one where you kind of move through shadows to solve puzzles, which was super innovative at the time. But South of Midnight, I think, is going to be a really, really cool game. The setting, just being in this kind of like magical biome, swampy kind of environment, I think looks really cool. You have some interesting animals, very interesting skeleton guy playing a guitar here. But I feel like there is a lot that they could lean into here. And I think it's going to kind of be like a Creole / voodoo-y type of game that they lean in into the end. And again, the environment, I love the idea of like a swamp game. I think that's something that is a biome that is not done enough in gaming right now.
Yeah, South of Midnight is definitely standing out for me as well. I love that trailer. I love that whole, it's like a Southern Gothic feel to it. Like, I don't think it's going to be like super scary, but I think we're definitely going to lean into the voodoo aspects and like kind of, and see Creole culture as well, like in this game. So yeah, bring on South of Midnight, man. I'm ready for it.
Anything Agreed. Else on that one, John?
Oh yeah. South of Midnight, by far the one I'm looking forward to the most. I think graphically and artistically, very unique. It reminds me a lot of Arcane, the League of Legends series, but a little bit more, the 3D models being a little bit more put together with a little bit more texture. I think it looks great. I will definitely be taking a look at it also.
It also kind of looked like that trailer was kind of stop motion-y as well, which I really like that too.
You know what we need? We need a good claymation stop motion game.
Ooh, absolutely.
That would be
absolutely
sick.
I agree.
Definitely one for the radar. Another game that we should be hearing about sooner than later is Fable. This is a franchise I freaking loved on the Xbox 360. I think they did a really good job with that game, and I'm very curious to see it expanded upon. New life, real, more realistic graphics, but still that nice humor, kind of that British humor that really leans into the nice puns and such. I think it'll be really cool to see how it plays out. But Fable is a game I expect us to hopefully see here, because I do think it's going to end up launching next year. Did you guys play the original Fables? Any of those?
I played the first time ago.
Long time ago.
Yeah, same.
So we'll have to see what that one brings to the table, but I'm pretty stoked for that one. Another one that has unfortunately been leaked out ahead of the showcases, so we will touch on it here because pretty much everyone has covered it. We are going to get a new Doom game, Doom the Dark Ages. Apparently, Doom is going to go back to the medieval times with this one. It's been a game in development for a little while now, but supposedly this turn was something a lot of people were not expecting. It was originally pitched many years back, and apparently they did end up going with it in the end. It just came a few iterations later. Doom is one of those super popular franchises. I have never been the biggest of Doom fans. I do have to admit, though, I think it is one of the smoothest running games ever released. The most recent Doom game was just incredibly smooth for all the animations throughout it. I know we've watched some people on the OTN server play it quite a few times. T-Spans in particular would go through it quite a bit. But just the ability for it to jump from animation to animation so fluidly with so much going on without melting a graphics card is just impeccable to me. And I'm really curious how they step that up with this next game. And then last but not least on those games that should be coming sooner than later, potentially a release date next year, is Clockwork Revolution. This was one of the most highly, I think, viewed trailers from the last showcase. This one comes from In Exile Games, kind of taking that steampunk approach to things a little bit like Bioshock Infinite and then twisting it up and giving it that In Exile flair that we see from games like Wasteland. I am very excited for this game. I think this game is going to be one of the biggest hits that Xbox puts out in the next couple of years. Anyone else have this steampunk star on their list?
Yes.
I'm excited for it. Yeah. Yeah. Definitely excited for it. I loved Bioshock Infinite. I thought that that game was incredible.
Great story, too.
Yeah. And I'm hoping that they do the same thing with this.
Yeah, I think it looks really good. They almost show off some abilities. I think there's like a timeline that gets shown off in this trailer, if I remember correctly, with something collapsing and then they rewind to bring it back. Oh, you see it right there, actually, on the trailer, walking people backwards. So I think that's going to be interesting as well, just kind of hinting at abilities. I'm curious how deep they go into that ability route. And again, we've seen it with Bioshock Infinite that it's kind of like injections that pull the abilities. I'm curious what route they go with here to bring those in. With it being cyberpunky, it's very possible they go a similar route. But overall, In Exile, when it comes to story writing, the Wasteland games were phenomenal. If you guys played through any of those, just the depth of story is very, very deep. And there's so many twists and turns. Similar to what John was saying with Starfield, your choices very much matter in games like Wasteland. If you guys played like Baldur's Gate, how there's like 50,000 something or whatever endings, very similar to Wasteland. It feels like there's many, many different paths that you can take. And I'm curious how pathy they get with this game, with it kind of being more of a first person RPG versus more of that tabletop God approach of things overall. Very, very curious. But the gun, the animation, the powers, everything looks super creative in this game so far from what we've seen. Next up, so moving on into third party games to watch. Again, we're not going to be here all night, so we're going to kind of keep moving along our list here. Some third-party games I think you could see in here, Stalker 2, Hollow Knight Silksong, Star Wars Outlaws is one I've heard some things about potentially making its appearance here, but Eric did mention at the top of the show, or maybe before we went live, that it will be in the Ubisoft showcase as well the following week, so I don't know if it'll be in both. We have seen some games do that before. Battlefield 2042 was in the Xbox showcase and then very quickly in the EA showcase right afterwards. So it's possible we get a double showcase for Star Wars Outlaws. Not 100% sure if that ends up being true. Persona 6 is another one I think could be a surprise reveal here. Dungeons of Hinterberg is an indie game that has been on John and I's list. And 33 Immortals. Guys, I can talk about it because I didn't sign an NDA, but that beta test was freaking phenomenal. It's like Hades, if you guys have played Hades, but with 33 players playing in co-op together. So you're fighting through these different dungeons, these different enemies, eventually taking on these kind of big boss level characters that play out kind of like a WoW boss style. So if you guys have ever done like a WoW dungeon or WoW raid, very similar to that, where you're matching and trying to, you have to combine your skills in certain ways while dodging certain patterns and abilities and things. And it plays out very fun. Those on Discord, both Eric's server and our server, we will definitely need to dive into some 33 Immortals when that eventually launches. And I believe that's Game Pass day one as well. The big highlights here, obviously, Stalker 2, Hollow Knight Silksong, Persona 6, and Outlaws. If or when they do show up in the showcase, I think those would be some highlight ones. Guys, feel free to touch on any of these or any other third-party hopes that you have out there as far as these other games that could potentially pop up.
I mean, Outlaws, I can definitely... I mean, if they do put it in the showcase, I think they'll do it mid-showcase. And just kind of have a teaser, more to follow tomorrow during the Ubisoft Forward. Or
was Outlaw shown in last year's showcase, Eric? Do you remember?
Yeah, it was kicked. It kicked off the showcase.
So they do have the marketing rights for it, probably.
Yeah. So it kicked off the showcase last year. Yeah. So I could see that. When it comes to Hollow Knight Silksong, I think it's time for that game to be shown.
I think
more.
It's going
to
get shown. I agree. Yeah.
And I really see them like kind of trying to dive into that, saying, hey, this is the best platform to play this on. You know, I mean, Xbox, of course, all of these platforms or all these companies are like, hey, this is the best place to play this game. But, you know, you be the judge of that. I think we'll see Hollow Knight Silksong. What else was there?
I think Persona 6 has a good shot of showing up.
Yeah. Here. I think so.
From the rumors, it is green themed, which I think makes sense for Xbox to pay for marketing rights for it. So I could see that one definitely making an appearance here. But again, guys, I mean, there's so many different third party games out there, right? From AAA to indie, there's always a number of appearances that do get made in here. We focus more on first party throughout most of this show, but I do think third party is one to watch for, especially when it comes to those games coming to Game Pass, like John has driven home time and time again on today's show. There's definitely a value bargain there, whether these games go to Game Pass or whether they're just published on different platforms overall. I think there's a very good chance we see some very big third party games here overall. The other thing I got to ask you guys, though, is the IP revivals, right? We have all these dormant IPs kind of sitting around the Xbox brand and the Activision brand. I know one John and I have talked about before is Banjo-Kazooie. We would love to see a Banjo 3 eventually make its way out. StarCraft is another one that John has mentioned a few times on tonight's show that is kind of sitting somewhat dormant. We've seen Ghost get canceled, the FPS game. We've also not really seen a new RTS come out of the StarCraft franchise in quite a while. Could that be one we see revive per se? On the Activision side as well, you have Prototype, very popular game at one point. Guitar Hero, they technically own the rights to now. Hexen is another one a lot of people are excited
about. Do you
know
how expensive the rights to those songs are going to be nowadays with Guitar Hero?
They have got to be pricey. They have got to be pricey up in there. But overall, I mean, that is one of the things they own the rights to. Do we eventually see a Guitar Hero revival? I don't know if this is too early for it to come back. And like John said, there are a lot of expenses to pay for, but it is one of those IPs that now sits dormant in the Xbox umbrella after this acquisition.
Better hope DJ your favorite Hero's artist is in a part of a Warner Music Group, because they're not going to let you get anything.
They're reviving DJ Hero, actually. That's going to be the one.
That would be cool.
Yeah, that was actually a lot of fun. DJ Hero was a lot of fun. I remember playing that a little bit.
Someone did something like that recently, and it flopped. I don't remember who it was.
At the Round One Arcade over in Potomac Mills here in Northern Virginia, there's a DJ-style Japanese arcade game that they have. Mm-hmm. I would love to be able to play it. I don't understand the instructions at all. And you can only do so much button mashing. But it looks cool. It sounds cool. There's a lot of, like, J-pop and J-rock on it, which is kind of cool. But other than that, I had no clue what was going on.
I'd actually like to see Prototype come back. I think that is a very underrated open world series, honestly. It had Infamous vibes. Like, I think they Infamous was inspired by Prototype, or it was vice versa. I'd like to see Prototype come back. Banjo, honestly, you need a platformer on
I really
on
think Banjo would be perfect to bring back.
Especially with PlayStation just dropping Astro.
Astro, yep.
Yeah, and that's hitting in September. If you would just come out with a new Banjo game, people would be so excited. You need a platformer. You absolutely need one. And honestly, you need to bring in the families. You need to bring in more family-friendly titles. Because that's where Nintendo is wiping the floor with them.
Mm-hmm.
It's with the family-friendly first-party exclusives.
Your Mario parties affordable. And all of that, 100%.
So now is the perfect time to bring in a Banjo revival. Even if it's not Banjo 3, if they just remake the original game. Like, just, you know, start from there and then go forward. And you know what? Revive Battletoads. I want another new Battletoads game.
That was fun. Did you play the one from DeLala like a year or two ago? A couple years
ago? Yeah, it was great. It was great.
Yeah, I thought it was super fun. And the humor in that game is just brilliant. I think it's a very, very fun aspect to it.
It was very well written. So that's what I would do. I would focus on platformers and trying to bring in more people for platformers.
Yeah, I definitely think there's potential there. I definitely think there's potential in the StarCraft area. Blue Dragon, Lost Odyssey have been ones thrown around a while ago as well. Just kind of bringing back the JRPG aspects to Xbox, pulling one of those originals back in. It's possible that we do eventually see one of those make their way back as well. Maybe in this showcase, maybe in another one. But I know those are ones that are hotly contested and recently brought up as well. But overall, John, any other IP revivals that you would like to see from this giant umbrella of IP that they're sitting on?
I want my Banjo-Kazooie, my man. I want my Banjo 3E. I want my Banjo 4E. I want Banjo 5E. I want my Banjo 6E.
I mean, people would pay for it, especially if it's Banjo.
Like, even with how horrible the original camera controls were for the original game, It was still a great game. Like, it was the puzzles you had to solve and figure out. I'm like, that was a kid's game. Like, it was good. Like, it was a solid game. Replaying it all these years later, it was still a very fun, enjoyable game that was still challenging. Well, go ahead.
That, and the character was popular enough to be in Smash.
Yeah.
It's a bird and a bear. And they have, like, stupid sophomoric humor, like shut your face, bird beak, and chicken legs. It's just all stupid stuff that's like friendly banter kind of stuff. Like, it was good stuff. It was a good game that had some humor to it. I mean, I thought they did a great job with it. I think they'd be crazy not to continue. Speaking of which, side note, I saw a Banjo-Kazooie plushie the other day. Almost bought it.
You should have.
No, I didn't. Too expensive. They wanted $40 for it.
Oh, yeah. No, that is expensive. No,
not happening.
That is expensive. Yeah. No, I get it. But, yeah, I mean, if that's the one thing that you should revive, absolutely, Banjo and Battletoads. Like, just bring those on. And make a multi-platform. Definitely make a multi-platform. I mean, you're sitting on a gold mine with those. I mean, if Spyro's going to be multi-platform and so is Crash, then, you know, make the other ones multi-platform.
No. Banjo-Kazooie, Xbox only.
Oh, my gosh.
Okay, Caveman John.
Caveman John. Yes, Banjo, I think, is going to be very high on a lot of lists, and we'll see what other IPs they might have in store. But again, the acquisition just took place as far as the Activision side of things. So I don't know if we'll see many of these come out as of just yet, but Banjo has been one under that Xbox umbrella for quite a while now. I believe they did acquire that one when they acquired Rare, which is over 10 years ago at this point. So there is plenty of time for them to have thought up Banjo 3. Hopefully, eventually, it does make its way out in the end.
I got one more for you.
Yeah, please.
Viva Pinata. Bring back Viva Pinata.
Okay. I like it.
That was another
Wait, John, what's with that face? You know what Viva Pinata is?
No clue what Viva Pinata is.
Oh, John.
I'm sorry. Unlike you guys, I play real video games.
Oh, my God.
Is this like Pinata Simulator 2024? Like, what is this?
Viva Pinata. I got to find a video for
you. Pinata Farm Simulator thing? Like, you would bring in, like, pinatas and, like, you're, like, doing landscaping to, like, make this area, like, accessible for, like, the different pinata creatures.
Yeah.
And then, like, sometimes they could get attacked by evil pinata worms or something. Like, it was ridiculous.
We're but definitely not fun. Selling it. I have fun. Not played much of this game, but I know it's, like, a cult classic.
My wife loves it.
Let me put it to you this way. Hey, Joey, I would rather play Halo.
Oh, my gosh. Okay. We're moving on. The Halo hater has spoken. Okay, some secret projects, and then we're going to dive into some more overarching stuff before we wrap up today's show. The secret projects, right? So there have been code names tossed around here and there. I'm curious if you guys think we'll see any of these at the showcase. Just to list a few of them out, Project Dragon from IO Interactive. It's meant to be kind of like a Diablo-esque game coming from the developers of the Hitman series. I don't know if this one makes it out, at least from a marketing perspective. I think there is some potential damage there putting it out while you're also trying to market Diablo's next expansion, depending on how those two go together. But I do think that is an intriguing one to watch if it does make its way out here. Project Tatanka, which is supposedly that Halo Battle Royale title in development in Certain Affinity. There's been rumors of that it's been canceled or it's been rolled into a next-gen model instead. I don't 100% know where that one is, but it could show up as well. There's supposedly a Wu-Tang Clan game out there from Brass Lion. Do we end up seeing that one? I have no idea, nor do I have any idea what to expect with a Wu-Tang Clan game. But supposedly that's the thing out there. Project Maverick, not many details on this, but coming from People Can Fly. We have Fallout 3 and Oblivion Remasters both rumored. Those would probably come from Bethesda or some of their partners. It could be a good time to release a remaster of one of those, right? We have a bunch of people waiting on the next Elder Scrolls game. And on the Fallout side, you just had the Amazon series pop off and sell all of your Fallout games like crazy on top of the player population skyrocketing. Maybe it's time for a Fallout 3 remaster as well. And then last but not least, I think we will finally see the reveal of ZeniMax Online's projects. At least one of them, I think, will make its reveal here in Sunday's showcase. So I'm pretty stoked to see what they have been working on, at least one of the projects over there at all. But are there any other projects here, these secret projects per se, that you guys are excited for or think will make its way into the showcase? No idea.
I would think if Fallout's going to do anything, now would be a great time with the success of their live action show.
I would agree.
Dropping anything Fallout related would be huge at the moment.
Mm-hmm. Fallout 3 remaster would actually be a huge win for them. Honestly, I think that that would be a very big win. Even in Oblivion remastered, I think it's time for those. And you could partner with Obsidian again to do a Fallout 3 remaster.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's definitely a possibility for sure. And I think that is a possibility moving forward on this list. With that being said, I think it's going to be a very good showcase. I think we're going to see a lot of great game announcements. But I don't know if game announcements are going to be the only things we get. There have been rumors of some other things potentially being stated in the showcase. And this will kind of be our last section of today's show. Achievement system improvements is obviously one close to my heart here. I'm hoping we see some improvements in that area. I've designed a rarity system for them. I don't know if they'll ever implement it, but I do love the idea of adding a little bit more rarity to the achievements. On top of the PlayStation Platinum, I think that's one thing PlayStation, when they copied over the achievement system and made it their own, they added bronze, silver, and gold, and then platinum is the kind of the high-level completion trophy. I think Xbox has definitely used something like that as like a complete badge, per se, to put up on profiles, which they've invested a little bit more into in recent years. Whether that's badges, whatever that ends up looking like, I definitely think that could be an area that they have definitely heard feedback on. They've said they're working on. I don't know what that ends up meaning. Is it just a complete badge? Is it a full rarity system? I don't 100% know. But I think that is one thing that hopefully we will hear about in the showcase or very soon afterwards as well. Backwards compatibility titles. Eric, I know you and I have dove into a lot of backwards compatibility titles. I think John has dove into a few as well. I know he had a night of playing Banjo-Kazooie, which we recently talked about.
There's a lot of alcohol involved with that one.
There you go. But I think backwards compatibility titles, they have previously said that they're done with the list because they couldn't acquire rights to these other games. But when you buy a giant publisher that has a bunch of IP rights, I think that probably opens the door back up for maybe some more backwards compatibility. It would not surprise me if we see a bunch of older Activision games, like your prototypes, like your older Call of Duties, end up becoming backwards compatible now that Xbox owns the rights to them. And maybe we see a big Game Pass drop accompanied by those as well at the end of the show. Like, hey, on top of learning about the next Call of Duty, go ahead and play the last 30 Call of Duty titles that are now available on Game Pass today. I think there's a possibility that we see some kind of, maybe not a massive drop, but a nice little backwards compatibility drop at the event as well. Eric, I know this one is close to your heart, and it's very close to mine as well. A 1-versus-100 style game show or social event, I think, would do so well in today's day and age. And I cry tears of sadness every time I think about them taking that away. I remember that was one of those super fun things you would do weekly. You get on with friends. You're like, yeah, we'll dive into Call of Duty or Halo or whatever. But first, we're going to spend some time doing some trivia together. And there were like thousands of people that tuned in for this trivia. And unfortunately, they lost the rights to the show. But that thing was so much fun to play for like half an hour to an hour before jumping into actual gameplay.
Oh, yeah. I miss 1-versus-100 so much. It was like that was when they really like were pushing Xbox Live as like this global meeting place for people to come together and play these games. And it was so much fun, you know, because like your avatar would be in like the crowd or part of the 100 or get chosen as one of the contestants. And like it would be a group of us, like three or four of us that would like get together. I think it was like four of us, and we would all make sure that our avatars were dressed like really nice, like in suits and dresses and stuff. And like,
I love that.
Yeah. Like, because like we wanted to try to be on the show and, you know, to play. And it was so much fun. I thought it was so brilliantly done. Like when Rock Band Beatles came out, they did like the Rock Band Beatles nights and stuff. They even had the voice of Cortana. They had the voice of Cortana doing some of the announcement for 1-versus-100. So really missed that game. And I think Joey, it's like maybe we should approach Microsoft about bringing it back because it was just awesome. It was so much fun. It was so much fun. So
it was just such a great social event. And that was also the time when they pushed Netflix to move from disc. I don't think many people know this, but Xbox was one of the main reasons Netflix moved from disc, because they ended up pushing the social features for it. And they had like that watch a movie together mode.
Oh, yeah.
And it was like you could load in with, I think, like up to 10 people or whatever and watch movies off one Netflix account. Obviously, that would not fly in today's day and age because Netflix wants everyone to have their own account. But it was just they were really investing into those social activities. And I really think 1 vs. 100 was one that I think would still play really well today. Overall.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, you could do it for any game show, really. Like, I mean, you could do Jeopardy as well. Like, you know, have the audience also answering trivia questions because they were still giving out prizes to the audience. Like, even if they weren't.
Well, because if you were in the audience, you were technically one of the 100 or whatever, right? For that vibe, if I remember correctly.
You were kind of like part of the mob, but you weren't part of the mob.
That's right. It was like an extended. Yeah. You're right. Yeah.
But yeah, it was awesome. Like, bring that back. Seriously.
That is one of my big wish list things. I would love to see something like that.
Oh yeah. And people would go bananas for it. Like, seriously, they would go crazy for it. Because us on the Xbox 360 who grew up in the Xbox 360 era or played a lot on Xbox 360. Yeah, it would be a shot of nostalgia. I'm going to shut up now because I've been gushing about this way too much.
It's all good. I'm going to go to John next for new hardware. John, do you think we see any new hardware at the event?
First, you guys are going to... 1 vs. 100 is not the move.
You don't like 1 vs. 100?
HQ Trivia.
Oh, no.
Oh, I'm sorry. Do you not like free money?
No, I do. Is it still a thing? I know.
No, God, no,
really
it's
hard.
Not a thing.
Yeah, I was gonna
it
say.
Needs to be a thing again, though. Who doesn't like making free money for knowing random stuff? Like the Queen of Bulgaria's middle name,
Svetlana?
Ha! There is no queen. All right. So, new hardware. Sure. Why not? I'm not expecting we're going to see much for new hardware, if I'm being honest.
Yeah, I think you get the all-digital Xbox here. Yeah. I think it's about time they show that off. I'm curious. I think the more borderline ones for me would be, do we see the new controller?
We already have an all-digital Xbox.
No. It's going to be an all-digital Series X. It's one of the ones that leaked during their trials. I think so. I think this is Brooklyn. Yeah. And then Sebel is the new controller, or Sebel or whatever. That could make its way here. We also have the puck that Eric always brings up, the Cloud Puck. Could that make an appearance, maybe?
I was just about to say, like, I think now's the time to do Cloud. Like, seriously, their big push now is they want people to play on these platforms. They want people to play Xbox anywhere that they can. Bring in a Cloud dongle, you know, because not everybody has a brand new Samsung TV that supports Xbox Cloud Gaming.
Right.
So, you know, bring in the dongle with a controller. I mean, and you could sell it for like $80 and people would probably buy it.
And more or less, I think that's what Stadia was, right? Like Stadia was just a plug-in with a controller? Yeah.
It was literally a Chromecast with a controller.
Yeah. And Luna is the same way, right?
So Amazon's? Luna, yeah. So Luna, you buy the controller for, and the Fire Stick has a Luna app in it. And like you just connect your Luna controller to the Fire Stick using Bluetooth and boom, it's good to go.
Yeah, I'm excited. I think new hardware is a possibility. It's not something super high on my list. I'm pretty happy with what I have here with the Series X. I don't really feel the need to buy a pro console. I have my own opinion about pro consoles in general. But overall, I feel like this is, if we're going to see it, this could be an event where it gets shown, especially ahead of the holiday window and some of those bigger releases like Avowed, like Call of Duty, like Indiana Jones. This feels like a good play. And like Eric said, I think the Cloud Puck would work really well here as well. If they decided to show that or a new controller off too.
My only issue, if you are going to show off new hardware, like a discless Series X, like an all digital Series X, you gotta put it at a good price point for people to upgrade. And that's been the main issue with this current generation of consoles. As somebody who just picked up a PS5, I spent over $500 on that PS5.
Yeah, expensive for sure.
Yeah. So, you know, you gotta just have a good price point for it. That's all I'm going to say about that.
I like it. I like it. Okay, boys, we are getting ready to wrap up today's show. We've gone over many, many games tonight, many predictions, many announcements for Summer Game Fest, especially with that kickoff show on Friday and the Xbox showcase coming on Sunday. We will be doing a co-stream of that showcase if you guys want to join us once again. It won't be as much talking, obviously, as we'll be watching trailers in full screen for a lot of the event, but that is going to be 1 p.m. over on Sunday, June 9th, 1 p.m. Eastern time, that is. We'll probably go live a little bit before that, probably 12:45 or so. For a brief pre-show and then go through that, as well as the Call of Duty Direct that will follow as well. And then wrap things up with a nice little closing thought and show there. Any other thoughts, guys, as far as things you're hoping to see at the showcase, whether it be the Xbox Showcase, Summer Game Fest, Ubisoft? I know Star Wars Outlaws is obviously very high on all of our lists, especially you, Eric. But anything else you guys are hoping to see here? Any dark horse picks that you think could make an appearance overall?
Stage crashers.
Oh my gosh. Hopefully not.
Drunk celebrities that don't know what they're doing there.
Nick Cage and Dead by Daylight again.
Yeah, Nick Cage showing up and he's like, I thought this is where the Declaration of Independence was.
I'm going to steal Dead by Daylight because there's a map to the Declaration on there.
Oh my gosh. He's going to
break out of Alcatraz again or something stupid.
He broke into Alcatraz, thank you.
Whatever.
Oh, chat wants a new Mass Effect game. Yeah, I think you mentioned this one as well, Dragon Age. I think there's always a possibility. I think Mass Effect might still be a little bit too early, but Dragon Age, Dreadwolf, I think there's a possibility we could see that in either the Summer Game Fest show or an EA show that summer, or this summer rather. I do think that one is getting closer to launch, so I think that's one to put up on your radar. But who knows? Maybe we get a new CGI trailer of Mass Effect. I think it is too early probably to show off gameplay, but it's always a possibility. Something like that does make its way out here as well. Yeah, I'm excited. I'm super stoked. I'm excited to talk about this on Discord, both our server, discord.me/OTN, as well as Eric's server over at SB Transmissions. Will be lots of good video game talk over there, as well as during the co-stream and afterwards of the co-stream that happens on Sunday, June 9th. Guys, I think we can go ahead and wrap up. Eric, I know you went over some of your socials earlier. SB Transmissions is typically where to find him. If you don't find it exactly, go ahead and search for it in that search bar, and you'll probably see it pop up. He's got a nice little logo there with the Starlight Beacon satellite station. What would you call it? Station, right?
No, it's actually the Jedi logo in the background.
Oh, the Jedi logo is what you call it. That's right.
Yeah.
That is right. The Jedi logo over there with Starlight Beacon Transmissions. And then John is this thing. John is where to find him on socials. Me at Courtside King. And OTN Media can be found pretty much everywhere at OTN Media. Sometimes we do have to throw an underscore in there. If you're searching on Instagram or Threads, it is at OTN underscore media. John, anything else to say as we kind of close out the show?
I'm hungry and I haven't eaten dinner yet.
Got to get that food in, baby.
Well, that doesn't happen when you get home 20 minutes before you go live.
That is true.
Yes. So, no, I'm excited for it. I think gamers are going to be in for a treat. I will say this. I love how Jeff Keighley always likes to temper expectations, and then he still gets flamed because it's even lower than what he's trying to
temper. It's usually the opposite, actually. Usually he hypes it up a ton, and then it comes down crashing. This time it's interesting because he's kind of trying to temper a little bit more.
I feel like he tried to temper the Game Awards also when it came to like world premieres or something. He did
it after the Elden Ring show for the Game Awards. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So like, like if you're going to come out and be like, oh yeah, by the way, don't get your hopes up. I'm just like, you're kind of putting a bad taste in my mouth already for your show. And it's like a week away. So, you know,
I will say this, a lot of Summer Game Fest is going to be people that Keighley is buddy buddy with talking about these games, and not necessarily that's a bad thing. Like Jeff, if you're watching, which I don't know if you
want. Jeff watching, he's too. Never mind, I'm not going to go there.
but the thing is like it's going to be a lot of people that he knows, and then it's going to be like, hey, this brand new IP from people that came from this studio in this studio is coming out. And then it's going to be a zombie game or a Souls-like and all this other stuff. So I'm tempering my expectations. You know, it's going to be a lot of roguelikes, a lot of Souls-likes. and a lot of survival horror.
I'm gonna have a bingo card drinking game.
Yeah.
I'm thinking of making a bingo card, I'm not even gonna lie.
Right. And I'm gonna tell you right now, the free space is gonna be when Jeff Keighley goes, I am just so honored and incredibly blessed to have this next world premiere on my it's incredible. I hope everyone, you know what, just guys, just go enjoy it and watch it be like Tina Turner sing along, you know, too. You know, it's something absolutely stupid, and we're sitting going like
the next Activision project.
Yeah, I was gonna say, is that first one backwards compatible?
Yeah, check that out. I was just going like, oh, and he comes back and he's like in tears, going, I just can't believe they gave me the rights to show this on my show. This is incredible. I'm so blessed. No,
like, my go ahead.
No, that's just Jeff Keighley to a T. Just like, this is going to be so great. This is the best game ever. You guys are going to love it. I'm going to show you a
this
trailer.
Voice now, what?
It's incredible. I'm just so...
sound like Keighley's Shaggy so, or something.
No. If Jeff Keighley is Shaggy, we'd be like, Hoinks, Loinks, I can't believe I got this as world premiere scoop. Oh, my gosh. It's so incredible.
He sounded like Al Gore crying in South Park.
Like, this cat is about to cause damage,
hey,
by the
hey,
way.
No. No, Pickle. He's trying to get his 10 minutes of fame.
Going hey, for that monitor.
Up. Yeah. Oh. Anyway, my free space is Hideo Kojima comes out on stage.
First off, I will not take Kojima blasphemy on this podcast.
I'm not.
He does love him some Kojima appearances, though, for
I
real.
Mean, he do.
Get down.
But not... Knock it off.
No, because that's my wife's work monitor, and she needs that.
Yeah, we don't want that knocked off.
Knock it off.
Get down.
Pickle, look at you like, boy, you best back up.
Oh my gosh, I'm dying.
I'm done. Like,
yeah,
Pickle,
this
is
great.
A stage crasher at the Game Awards.
I wonder what Bill Clinton's rabbi is going to think about this whole thing.
Oh my gosh.
He wants Grand Theft Auto 6.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I wouldn't be surprised if we actually saw GTA 6.
I do not think you'll see GTA 6. But yeah, you never know. It's always a possibility. Yeah. I think Take-Two is probably going to keep that one close to their chest, though. Okay, guys, great stuff. Lots to look forward to. Again, there's over 20 showcases for Summer Game Fest. The bigger ones, probably Friday with Jeff Keighley's Summer Game Fest, as well as the Xbox Showcase and Call of Duty Direct on Sunday. You can watch us co-stream once again, probably right around 1 p.m. Eastern time on Sunday, June 9th. Almost said July. Sunday, June 9th is where we'll be for that. But yeah, please follow socials. Please find us on Discord. Please come over to Twitch, twitch.tv/OTN. OTN Media, that is. We'll put this out on podcast feeds as well, hopefully not too much later, so you guys don't miss out on any announcements in the show or any predictions and so on and so forth. Regularly, we do other shows on Twitch, Level Up Podcast, typically Thursdays. It does adjust here and there during the NBA 2K season, but for now, we're still leaning toward that Thursday at 8 p.m. slot on most Thursdays, so we'll see you then.
Oh, am I supposed to transition us to the outro?
Yeah, I think unless you have anything else to say, we can go ahead and move on.
I just want to say it's been a blessing to be a part of this show. So super excited. I can't believe we're going to be able to co-stream this on Sunday, Joey. It's incredible. Transition to the close.